Here. Okay, anyway, welcome, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. And if you would please join me first for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Director Barringer is not in attendance today, but we do have a quorum. And so we'll move on then to item 1D. Okay, item 1D. We'll start with that. And we have, with 1D, I think what we'll first, we have no request for public comment, and so we will move then to the recommendation for how to proceed. And at this time then, I'm going to turn this over to Vice President Thompson, and you then can go ahead and proceed.
Okay, can I get your gavel?
He wants the gavel.
Yes.
Whoa.
Here's the gavel.
One moment of power here. Okay. Directors, the item 1D has the recommendations for procedure, and so I will now open the nominations for the office of president. Director Sanders?
Procedurally, Mr. Vice President, I have a question for the district council. Is it really necessary to have two separate motions, one for president and one for vice president, or can we wrap it up into one?
There's no prescribed formula for how you choose to proceed with the election of your officers. It could be done by one motion. You could draw straws. Okay. It really is wide open. So,
okay.
What's written in the recommendations is just one manner of proceeding.
Thank you. with that, I have some preliminary remarks based on some experiences that I had when I previously served on the board. The district is now at a very, very critical juncture, and 2016 is going to be a, no pun intended, watershed year for the district. I say that because we have perhaps the most important permit application that the district has ever processed pending with the county, and that is a permit to make the coastal development permit for the sustainable water project permanent. And that process is going to wind up in the lap of the Coastal Commission. Over the past year or so, there's been a lot of spade work that has been done by the current leadership team of the district. Spade work consisting of attending meetings, talking to other public officials, both elected and staff, and so forth. The same set of circumstances arose when I previously served on the board. And for purposes of continuity, for purposes of presenting the same face to elected officials who have control over what the district can do and cannot do, over staff members who make recommendations about what the district can do and cannot do, the decision was made to retain the same leadership for two successive years. That decision that was made when I was on the board previously worked out to the benefit of the district. And so for that reason, I am going to nominate Gail Robinette as president and Mike Thompson as vice president, and I so move.
We have a motion. I'll second the motion.
That passed already? We did offer, and there was no request at the time.
May I speak to it?
Did you want to comment on this? I'll allow it. Do you have your slip? Okay. Thank you, for the record.
Nope.
Oh, thank you. Tina Dickinson, Cambria. This is really quite remarkable. It reminds me of backroom deals, quite frankly. With all fairness, while I may not agree many times with what Director Rice has to say or what her thoughts are for the CCSD as our director, I think it's grossly unfair that she has been bypassed not only as vice president, but president, and that our newly appointed director, Mr. Sanders, is calling all the shots. He no sooner got elected, next meeting, he's saying, we need continuity. Are you kidding me, Mr. Sanders? She has been here
Please remember to direct my comments to members of the board. Thank you.
Excuse me for that. But Director Rice has been on this board for a good long time during the whole process of the emergency water supply project, which has changed names about five times. But she has been here. Talk about continuity. What is there not continuous about Director Rice's not being considered for at least vice president? I mean, this is a joke, is it not, to the community? Though, and you talk about transparency. You talk about wanting to make this community believe in you and trust in you. I'm sorry. There's very little trust, in my opinion. And the way you're going about things, it just looks like more and more backroom deals. That's exactly what it looks like. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll continue further now. We have a motion moved and seconded. So, discussion? Director Rice?
Thank you, President Robinette. I do think continuity is important, and that's one of the things that a board that has four-year terms staggered provides. And in my desire to show that I'm a team player to the folks that are sitting up here on the dais, I forgot the whole team is that the team is actually the whole town of Cambria, not just the people sitting here. The folks who voted for me, probably many of the same folks who voted for you guys, including Director Sanders when he ran for office. Everybody who's sitting up here on this dais, other than me, has served as an officer. Now, while I may not always agree with Ms. Dickinson, and this isn't about fairness, this is about team. If we continue to have the same face, and we haven't gotten anywhere yet, I think that it is time, at the very least, to have somebody in that may bring some fresh ideas, because we didn't get it done last year through no fault of President Robinette, Vice President Clift, who worked very hard on trying to reach our goals last year. But I think that it's time for leadership to change, and a new face might actually bring us closer to our final goal, which I believe is making sure that this town is provided with good management of all the resources, including a new resource we have, which is a very expensive treatment plant to ensure that we protect our habitat and our supply of water. We have a lot of issues upcoming that are not just about the continuity of making sure we get this CDP. We have issues with fire, that we have to deal with?
You are not on the timer.
Thank you. While I respect Director Sanders' intention in trying to ensure a continuity, I strongly disagree, and I didn't say anything at the meeting where he was nominated, Vice President Thompson was nominated for that position, because it wasn't a battle I chose to fight on that day. I didn't say anything last year, because I didn't think it was as important as making sure that we had the leadership in place to get things done. There's nobody, including Jim Beringer, who's not even here, who hasn't served as president, including Director Sanders. I would really appreciate an explanation as to why I have been passed over again, because I don't think it's good for the team, and the team is not just us. It's this entire town.
Well, I speaking to your comment, Director Rice, there's nothing personal in what I have moved that the board do. Whether it's business or government, in terms of how the district proceeds through the gauntlet, if you will, of regulatory agencies to get to the end of the line, it's a relationship-driven process. And I know that both President Robinette and Vice President Thompson have developed relationships, and as I said when I explained why I was going to make the motion that I did, it is important, I believe, for the district to continue to have as its vanguard for this coming year the same people who have had the relationships developed in the past, so that we don't waste time with development of new relationships, and so that the message of the district is consistent from one year to the next as we transition into processing this very, very important permit and other things that are going on that are very important. I did not serve on the board when you were first elected, so I can't speak to why you weren't made the president or the vice president previously. I can only speak to what I think is in the district's best interest, and by that I mean not just the district, but the entire community's best interest in terms of going forward for what is going to be a very, very critical year for the district.
And while I do agree, if I might.
Were you going to speak, Vice President?
No, I was going to.
Okay. Yes, back to you, Director Rice.
While I do agree relationships are important, I have also spent a fair amount of significant amount of time since I've been on this board developing some of those relationships, including with folks at the Coastal Commission, both on staff and on the commission itself. I have kept up with all of the details that are going on with anything that's available publicly and anything that I can get my hands on as a board member. And I don't think that the regulatory agencies are unfamiliar with the fact that officers of boards like ours change every year. I respect President Robinette. Continuity with Vice President Thompson is less of an argument for it. I absolutely respect all of the work that's been done, and I don't see that there would be a change in message, because I think that it's very clear what the goals of this district are. And I think I've been very clear that that's what I represent whenever I go out and speak about our district, whether or not I'm speaking for our district, which I don't ever do because I've never been officially approved to do so in front of an agency. I don't think continuity is a good reason to be going with President Robinette and Vice President Thompson. I can tell it's going to take 3 votes, and it's not going to be hard to tell what's going to happen. I would hope, however, that we don't go this direction. Continuity is, all of us are equals, and to not have a change puts the rest of the board at even more of a disadvantage as to knowing what's going on. I don't think it's appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Carmel, we have yet another after-the-fact request for public comment. Do you have anything that you would like to say about that?
Again, as a presiding officer, it's up to you whether you want to accept that or not.
Okay, I'm sorry this happened because I think it's, on the one hand, I want everyone to have their voice. And so, yet on the other hand, typically public comment comes prior to the board's motion and deliberation. But I am going to also recognize this second request, and I would ask this would be the final request, and that is for public comment with Al McKinnon. Alan? Monique, good to see you.
Good to see you. My apologies. I got in a little late, and I wasn't planning to speak on this issue. But 3 weeks ago, I sent a letter to the Cambrian, which will be published probably next week, according to Steve. Maybe we talk about continuity, and that's important. I know you guys work hard. I've been there, and I know what challenges you have in front of you. But Bartle and Wells, I think, did us a disservice. If we look at what he did, he said there was no free water. So we had a base fee, and then we have new charges that actually create quite a spin. With 6 units of water, follow what I'm just saying, it'll get to the need for lack of continuity. 6 units of water would be $93.50 per billing period. 2009, when we had a 9.75% increase in water and 15% in wastewater, that was under very severe economic times. And the community understood the needs and recognized the extensive cost cutting that was conducted by the board and by management, by staff. So if you look at what it was then, $23, almost $24 for a bi-monthly charge versus $93.50, that equates to 293% increase in the average billing for 6 units of water at the present time if these rates go forward. Some of the reasons leading up to the shocking water proposal was that it took over 2 years for the board and staff to recognize you had a 40% drop in revenue. Did you do anything with respect to expenses? You use reserves more than you should. It was far too aggressive. You rushed to building the EWS, and that was a political push. And you made decisions of, again, using a consultant firm versus using an off-the-shelf product that have gotten you there a lot quicker and a lot less expensive. That being said, you wound up with an overly expensive and yet to be used desal water system. You were non-conservative, just a few more moments, non-conservative with those reserve funds. And what you did, you put the cart before the horse. Instead of getting a consensus of all the different committees, the odd 20 agencies that exist that need permits so that you could move forward, you went ahead with what I consider an unreasonably expensive product.
Do try to conclude.
I am right here. It would be more helpful for CCSD leadership to speak directly to the public instead of through a consultant, through the public information officer, through BWA consultant. The public deserves to understand how much such a large financial shortfall that you've created, and to know specifically how those rate increases are going to solve not only today but tomorrow's problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Always points well taken.
Madam President, following the vote, we can take a little bit of time to address some of the issues raised by Mr. McKinnon.
All right. Okay. Any further discussion then on election of officers? Okay. I think we are ready then for a roll call.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion carries 3-0. I'm sorry, 3-1. That was really quite something, and Director Rice, I would like to say to you.
My vote counts. So it's 3-1.
I have the deepest respect for your work. I think, in fact, listening to former President McKinnon, the role that you played and Director Barringer on this rate committee certainly gave opportunity for you to do something very, very worthy for the community. And this is a time where we hopefully move forward together and we continue to work in the way we do. And so I ask for that from you, too. Thank you. Okay, then. Now we're going to have special reports. Do we have... Well, let's see. You had wanted to comment on Mr. McKinnon's comments.
Let me just say that, first of all, I respect Alan McKinnon's opinion very much. I served with Alan for 2 years. Alan, was
four
it?
Years.
4 years altogether. That's right. And Alan, I think, did a yeoman's service for this community during his service on the board. There's no budget hawk like Alan McKinnon. Having said that, I think it's a bit unfair to chastise the board for having made decisions about the sustainable water project. Objectively looking at the process the board followed, it seems to me that the board was almost forced to take advantage of events as they unfolded. And there was a confluence of events that resulted in the board being able to take advantage of some opportunities that may never arise again. Not the least of which is a very substantial grant that helped the district financially in terms of building the plant. And I think later on today there will be an announcement about a very significant check that the district has just received that will restore the district's reserves. So when you put all of the facts together, I think an objective person could come to the conclusion that the board acted prudently and reasonably. What we have now is a situation where a condition of approval imposed on the district in terms of operation of the plant is very restrictive. But what the district is doing now is going through a process which will lead to a permanent coastal development permit that will relieve that operating restriction. So you just kind of have to take things as they come, take advantage of certain opportunities that are presented. The board did that, and the board is now going through the process that will eventually lead to having the operating restrictions on the plant lifted. Thank you.
Just let me respond back to you.
You know, we really can't have the debate.
He violated the Brown Act by having a discussion about what I said. He could have asked for clarification.
Wait a minute. That's where I draw the line, Mr.
Okay.
McKinnon. If you're accusing me of committing a crime, you can go to the district attorney.
It is a crime to violate
the Brown Act.
I want to get back to the agenda. This is not on the agenda. I thought you were commenting on the lack of continuity. We were on the election of officers.
That's right.
And you talked a lot about things that concerned you that this board has done. But I really need to get back to the agenda.
Understand.
And we need to move forward, and I appreciate that.
And I will talk at the other opportunity for
you have three more minutes
comment.
Under public comment if you
Thank
fill
you.
Out a form.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We are into special reports. And is Commander Taylor, I haven't seen the Sheriff's Office's representative here today, so we'll move on then to the CCSD Fire Department report provided by Battalion Chief Eric Shalhu. Welcome.
Good afternoon, President Rumnet and directors of the board. Eric Shalhu, Battalion Chief assigned to Cambria District. So you'll see under operations, I put our training hours just under 85 training hours for the month of November. It's something that's kind of new. I think it's important for the board and the public to know what their fire department is training on and the various subjects and things that you require us to be trained in. So on November 14th, the fire department and the reserves conducted a rope rescue drill just north of Leffingwell, and we had all the reserves and all the full-time staff with the rope rescue drill. We sent two fire captains to Management 2C, which is for the State Fire Marshal Office of Training, is a requirement for the chief officer classes. They're well on their way to getting their chief officer certs. We have several significant retirements that have occurred this month, and I'd just like to kind of mention those folks. The first one is Division Chief John Richardson. He was our division chief that took care of our hand crews at Cuesta Camp. And then Chief Matthew Harrigi, who had 30-plus years in the fire service as well. His last duty day was on the 6th. He was a battalion chief in the North San Luis Obispo County. And then, of course, Battalion Chief Phil Veneris, who had over 30 years also in the fire service. His last day was December 6th, and he was the North Coast Battalion Chief that serviced this area for over 13 years. And then, of course, Unit Chief Rob Lewin, who's had over 37 years in the fire service. He announced his retirement on December 4th. And tomorrow will be his last duty day. He was unable to make it today, and he had a very busy schedule, of course, the last couple of days that he's still working. And, of course, Chief Reeder here is the interim chief while Chief Lewin's retirement as Chief Lewin retires. As far as here in Cambria, there's a new captain up at Station 10, Ben Graves. He's been around for a long time in this unit, but he's newly assigned to Station 10 up there on the hill, and hope to introduce him to you folks in the near future. He's basically coming in behind retired Captain Mark Sparling. As far as significant events go, we had a structure fire on December 9th. It was in the second story above the 700 block of Main Street. It was a residential slash commercial structure, residential on top with a balcony with commercial showroom floor on the bottom floor. There was a little over $30,000 estimated damage. There was a shed on the second story on a balcony with a hot tub that were both destroyed. And when our first engine arrived, they found the shed and the hot tub fully involved with fire, extended down to the ceiling, or actually the floor of the ceiling of the commercial structure. No damage was done to either side of the where the commercial structures touched on either side of the building that was on fire. So they made a good stop. We should be proud of them. There were no injuries that were reported as well. And with that, that's pretty much my report. If you have any questions.
Any questions for Battalion Chief Shalhoub? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to do as we usually do on public comment. If you wish to make public comment, you need to get your slip in before the item. We have another one here that has come in now after the sheriff's report, and we really have to get back to our standard procedural operations here, so I'm not going to call that one. I'm not going to debate it either. I will not. Thank you. Okay, item 3A is Dean Flores. Welcome. And he is here to present item 3A. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. Well, let me first start by giving you a little report on some funding items.
Excuse me. I am going to ask this. Ms. Dickinson, you said you were leaving.
What? She did not. Are you kidding?
I was under the
re-elected you as president and you don't even know what
You know, I want you to be
go back to AGP and check the video.
I want you to, if you are going to speak on 3A, I did not see you in the room. You left. Well, we have started 3A, but Mr. Flores has not really started yet. Yeah. So let's go ahead and if you'll let me speak to you with respect, rather than to be
you just insulted me and you lied because you said I said I was leaving. That's you started.
Well, you got up. Now, can we not argue? I'm not going to argue. Come on. To move on, I'm going to now, since you left the room on item 3A, which you requested to speak on, and then you left. I do not wish to continue this interruption.
Then stop acting like someone who doesn't know what they're doing. Enough is enough. I've never been so insulted. I did not leave, and I never said I was leaving. Just disregard 3A, then. I would like to have spoken after Mr.
As I am trying very politely to say to you, you were out of the room on 3A. Let me finish. And I introduced Mr. Flores. Since you have such a need to speak on 3A and returned, I am asking you to to give you public comment if Mr. Flores would agree that you can
hold
your report.
Yes, Madam Chair, absolutely would defer. Yes,
that would be very kind of you.
I would like to hear Mr. Flores' report.
He has, no, you asked for public comment.
Let it go. Forget it. I withdraw.
Thank you. It is done. We will forget it.
Wow. This is what we have for another year. Good gracious.
Okay, Mr. Flores, I'm sorry for the start and the stop. Would you please come forward and welcome to Cambria.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Always a joy to be here. Just a few items on the legislative front and also at the federal level. You do know and may have followed the news that the water bond at the congressional level, Senator Feinstein, and also the House bill did not make the last couple of hours in terms of the funding. And as you know, that was very important to us as we try to figure out how Cambria fit into the Feinstein bill. We do have some important funding in that. I do understand, however, literally on the way down, that there may be some coming back to the table on that. So let's keep our hopes up. And more importantly, I would like to ask a few members of the board to maybe entertain having on their break someone from Senator Feinstein's office here to go over the project, talk a little bit more about it. She's been a great sponsor, but also I think getting the other side of the house to recognize that. So I'm going to reach out to see if they may be able to do that. On the legislative front, the legislature is about to start. They began January. I would also say to a few of the members of the board that giving an update to certain members, particularly on the policy side, the environmental side, and more importantly, the recycled and the water side would be important. So I'll be working with your GM, hopefully, to schedule a time for about 2 days. I think we can actually get this done in about 2 days. As the GM knows, that probably means about 20 meetings. We do them pretty quickly, pretty rapidly, but I think without pain, I think it gives everybody the opportunity to get an update on exactly where we're at here in the district. And then I would also mention that the bond financings that are continuing at the state level, the water regulatory boards themselves will be taking a hiatus. They will probably go dark around the 21st, and I imagine that they will come back somewhere in early January. So I think we, you know, we'll wait to see what has transpired there. As you know, we have a PM assigned to the district that's going very well. And hopefully, you know, we will pick up those discussions as we get back. Now, on the more immediate level, I would actually like to call the chairwoman, Madam President, if you can come to the podium and the RGM. I have a check that I'd like to hopefully present to both of you. And Bob Gressens, if come on up, because without your email being in existence, I think it would be almost impossible. And I'd ask Tim to come up, but I know he's going to record this somehow. But I would like to say thank you to the board, Bob, Madam President, for being diligent with us, and, of course, our GM that deals with the county. We have a check from the state of California for $4.16 million to present to the board. It is the continuum of the grant money. I know we've all kind of waited for this for a bit, but I would like to present this to all of you, Madam Chair, Madam President, on behalf of the state of California and the county of San Luis Obispo, I should say. So everybody should give a hand for that. That's a good thing for the district. There you go, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Jerry, and Bob. So, Madam Chair, you can
see. Well, all right. I'll just say this from here. First of all, this is a collective effort of everyone here in this room. This is a collective effort of everyone in our community. I really appreciate the work. In particular, Bob Gresham worked so hard on this. I'd like to give him a round of applause. And our own district council, Tim Carmel, it was right in there. Appreciate his help. There are many. But I appreciate the full board and the efforts that were made there. And I appreciate Mr. Flores, too, who has certainly been very, very active in shadowing this. And as you recall, we had the grant, and then we had a few more things to complete. So we worked very, very hard on that. And then the county had a little oops, and so it looked like the county was not going to receive any of the funding. And so they got that resolved. And so we first got, what was our first grant? 3.9. 3.9 million. But after the county then was contacted by the state that they had some things that weren't in order, they got the things in order, and we appreciate that effort on the county's part. And so then we wound up getting the 4.3 million. So actually it was a, we thank the county for whatever oops they made, because it turned out to be to our benefit. So I just want to thank everyone here. And so, all right, we should get a picture. All right. And then I need to know what to do with the check.
Give it to Patrick. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you're proceeding back, I would probably just ask Patrick to figure out what time the bank closes today. It would be a good thing. So as you know, I mentioned last meeting, I have a quarterly report that's due in January. We'll have that. We'll go over the percentage items for all of the tasks assigned to Balanced Public Relations. And again, I will ask the GM to make a little bit of time for a couple of visits, and more importantly, a trip to Sacramento. We actually need to do that big beginning of the year, so we can actually give a little briefing education to some new members of the, as people start to now move committees. There's a new speaker, I imagine the assembly will change somewhat significantly. Began about mid-January, new policy assignments, new people. It's always important to give them an update. And as GM knows, it was very valuable the last time. This one, I think, will be much more thorough and, of course, I think much more substantive in terms of meetings set. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions, comments? Director Rice?
Thank you for your report. I'm still hoping for some sort of written list of folks that you've met with and meeting, so that we know, in case, God forbid, you were to drop dead. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
For a long, long number of years. However, I also want to make sure that we are again focusing on what it is that we're doing, having these meetings up at the state, because I'm not sure what that it has to do with the main purpose for which we hired Mr. Flores and his company. And so, and we still haven't had a whole lot of discussion at the board level. I mean, everybody agrees that it's important to be pursuing a regular coastal development permit. We know where some of these obstacles are that need to be overcome, and we know what needs to be done. And I'm not sure where that fits in with the purposes for which we hired Mr. Flores, which apparently he's worth his money. I'm not going to argue that, especially not today. I don't know why that check wasn't ginormous, but that's all right. Probably cost more to mail it that way. But I want to make sure that what happens, is that this board sets the policy and not have the policy being set by either the general manager or by Balanced Public Relations. So I strongly urge, especially if January is an important time to go, I would like to know more about why that's something that is within the reasons for which we hired Mr. Flores.
Madam Chair, let me just, if I could say, I will, yes, absolutely get a list in terms of potential meetings and meetings that should happen. As you know, the Coastal Commission is a very interesting board. It's made up of various districts. Those districts, a few of them we've met with, our local person, obviously, but also the Assembly and the Senate have appointments to that board. The leadership of the Assembly and the Senate always like to know the direction, and particularly projects that fall within that. And underneath that are policy chairs who absolutely want to know how their individual representatives are voting in each House. So I think it's always good, just as a general side, to begin to let everyone know, both in the Assembly and the Senate, starting with the Speaker and the Pro Tem, and moving down to those appointments and policy level folks to at least get a good understanding, and if you will, just a status of where this district stands at this point in time, and more importantly, where we're going in front of the Coastal Commission, if that indeed happens. As you know, it's really going to be more about the county approving this, and then whether it's actually appealed, we will see. But I do think that in preparation for that, we absolutely need to make sure, and I continue to be on calls with the IR to make sure that we meet the very high standards, if indeed that the Coastal Commission is asking for. I think we have a great team. I think the timeline is workable, but I do think we absolutely need to begin to continue to give updates to folks so they understand with a running start how the district stands in terms of its current project. So I will absolutely get you and the board that list probably within the next week.
Thank you. And
yes,
Vice President Thompson.
Mr. Flores, thank you first of all for all the assistance with the Prop 84 funding. Now, I presume that our next objective would be to get into the mix. We're in the mix already, but to move forward with the Proposition 1 initiative. And yeah. Can you give us a brief update on that process?
Sure. At this point in time, all of the projects and that will be eligible for funding, I believe, from the district have been put forth. You have an assigned manager at the state level. I did mention they will be going dark, most likely the 21st, but I know that they will hit the ground running the first week of January. And I know they have to give a report to the legislature somewhere, I believe, in late February in terms of how the Prop 1 funds have been, how it's been going, how they've been dispersed, and more importantly, what's the regional aspect of those disbursements? Is it just kind of large areas or are other areas getting those funds as well? I assume that the staff will want to be ready for that, and we want to make sure that this project is reflective of the regional nature of success for DWR, and I think that's kind of their overall. My assessment is that we continue to work with them, and hopefully we'll get something in front of the legislature. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Board.
Comments? Questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much for your report.
You got it.
Okay, we'll move to item 4 on agenda review. Are there any additions, deletions, something we want to pull? Director Rice?
Can we please pull 7C?
7C. Okay, we'll make a note to that. Okay, and we can discuss that when we get there. All right, any other deletions, changes to the consent agenda? Okay, we are now into public comment. Item 5A first. First person that would be commenting on 5 is public comment is Alan McKinnon.
Thank you, Board President.
Morning.
First, I'd like to say thank you, Greg, for that dialogue. I appreciate it. I think that's the way we could have a good interaction versus strictly the Brown Act. I think we have to realize that a 293% increase, comparatively speaking, from 2009 until the rate that we're proposing is excessive. And the only way, and it is not my intention to degrade the performance of either the board or staff, but to say from where we're sitting in the community, that's a horrendous number. And it would only increase if you go beyond that 6 units to where it might possibly be. The average across California is 8 units per billing period, and that is below really what we're planning to be once we get through the drought. I want to just focus on the reasons I think that we have such a hole, And it goes to what I said before. You weren't really looking at the environment when you saw that 40% drop in revenue, but continued to spend by drawing down on your reserves. We had over a $4.5 million reserve in 2012, and hopefully with this influx of funds, you're back whole again. I don't know. I don't know if the public knows exactly where the finances of the community are, of the CCSD are, is at the present time. One of the things that I did also want to comment on, the dependence on state and federal grants to support both present and future planning. They're wonderful things, but from a commercial standpoint, the reasons I cited before, and then adding into the counting on kind of manna from heaven, a commercial company would be headed for bankruptcy. There's no question. We could not sustain a 40% decrease in sales in revenue. And still operate at the same level before that we were operating beforehand. And I think the political push that forced you guys into trying to make a desal happen was unfortunate. And I think that what you planned to do, if you remember, back in August 14th, you were going to have a desal plant. And then it was September, then it became January 15th. So I could only say you guys have to come back to the community and explain what is it that you're trying to do with these increases and show us specifics and show us how that desal is going to play an important part, and as well it should, EWS desal, I don't know what the name is at the present time. But under those circumstances, I'm with the program, and until then, I'm skeptical. So thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKinnon. What we don't respond to public comment, but your format that you're talking about certainly in the future could be included in a workshop, more dialogue. So thank you for that. We'll consider that.
And I would add, fair enough, you know. It's a appropriate issue to raise.
President Robinette, after the rest of public comment, I have a comment to make about the rates issue that was just raised as a member of the committee for the rates.
We are under public comment on 5A, though, where that we really cannot discuss back and forth here. But when we can find an appropriate moment to move that in, I want you to do that, okay? It's very clear right on our agenda that we actually cannot interact on public comment. Otherwise, I'm sure we could be here a long time, but it would be a violation of the Brown Act. On 5A, next request is Christina Tobin.
Thank you for having me today. I have been a resident of Cambria for about 3 years now. And I'm the founder of a national organization called Free and Equal Elections. It's a 501c3 organization that's here to broaden our electoral choices through education. And in speaking with a lot of different people in the community, from the youth to the elders and so on, and leading on a national level and helping get accountable people elected into office, I felt that it was my responsibility here at 34 years of age to be here today, to be involved in the community here at the board. And I do recognize a lot of concerns in speaking with a lot of individuals in the county, and that is Cambria. Transparency and accountability within the board is something that seems to possibly be lacking. I do like to give the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise, and it's been very great to hear this gentleman back here, this lady, to learn from them. And I'm looking forward to learning a lot more from the community, as I feel that I've learned a lot more from them so far than I have from the board, respectfully so. Next year, Phoenix Elections plans on holding a forum in Cambria. We have hosted multiple presidential debates, including a presidential debate moderated by Larry King and myself in 2012. And so for me, I felt hypocritical. If I didn't get involved in my community level, that's really where it's at. And I do hope that more youth get involved and more individuals, because a lot of the problems stem from lack of accountability within our local elections as well as national. So on that note, I would have supplied my card at the beginning. I'm just learning the procedure here, but I am disheartened by the procedure of not taking a free and equal chance of turns for each individual to represent the board, whether it be as vice president or president, respectfully so. And I do think that it was very, very wrong for Ms. Amanda Rice to not be appointed, given, from my understanding, the community and a lot of people liking her, if not a majority, because she speaks the truth. It definitely is questionable. But again, I like to give the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise, but it is questionable as to what the intentions are as to why she's not the president or vice president. So I thank you very much for your time today. I look forward to learning more from this meeting and speaking even more in details about the projects going on in the community. And again, I thank you so much for your time and taking the time to be a part of this. And I hope that more transparency rises in the future, because the people of Cambria deserve it. Thank you.
Thank you. And next on 5A, Tina Dickinson.
Tina Dickinson, you are a new face to me, Christine. Never seen you before, but welcome to Cambria, and welcome to Cambria politics. I hope you will indeed stay involved and hope to make a difference in our community. Thank you. Now, as for the $4.176 million, I did learn about this from Public Works yesterday. I'm very glad. I say Merry Christmas to you. However, I think for the sake of transparency, it would be very good if you were to let us know through staff how much is owed from that $4.176 million to CDM Smith. I think it was $1.25 million. There was a Sansone lawsuit for $330,000. How did that get, how was that eventually resolved? Speaking of lawsuits, I noticed that the PIO has certainly not put anything on the news and publications of the latest filed December 3rd, 2015, San Luis Superior Court, Landwatch versus CCSD, that a trial date for March 23rd has been set. Why is it that we only hear the good news from CCSD, but we don't hear news that is unfavorable to the district on the website? There was another ruling, another lawsuit filed September 21st, Noonan versus the CCSD. The ruling on that just recently, I think it was December 11th, they were asking for transfer of the of venue. That motion was denied. I don't know if that's going to be continued on or not. I don't think it probably has a whole lot of legs, but the point is there's been no closed sessions for how many months now? No closed session today, and yet we are learning, those of us who pay attention, that there's news, legally speaking. As far as the $4.1 million, I would say that for Cambrians this is a very good, but you still owe probably close to half of that with outstanding debt. $2 million of that could have paid down on August 1st, the loan. That's what we had heard was going to happen. But apparently certain folks thought the 1980 San Simeon Basin Plan would suffice for groundwater management plan. That was not the case. That put way more time. So you lost out on getting it August 1st and paying down the loan. But at that point, you'd already spent $4.5 million of the general fund, of which Cambrians did not have a vote. It was just spent because of the rush to judgment, because of no EIR, because of all the mitigation measures. And now you're stuck with an effluent pond that the regional board is telling you you need to address in the EIR what you're going to do with your waste. You were told that last year by the regional board, and you still haven't done it. So There's lots of stuff going on, and as far as transparency, when you talk about that, it was only because Elizabeth Bettenhausen mentioned to all of you in an email that there was nothing on your website regarding the rate increase. A whole month later, nothing, until the whole zip code issue came up. So much for transparency, and I wish you luck, but Cambrians, don't give them another dime because they don't deserve it. Thank you.
Moving on now to item 6, General Manager's Report. Do we have another? Oh, my goodness. No, we don't have anything else on 5. Okay, Laura, I have you down for 1D. Were you wanting to speak on 5A or 5? All right. Is it not on the agenda today, the item you wish to address? Well, according to, and I will just read this, it's public, it certainly is disclosure right here. Under public comment on 5, members of the public may now address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board, but not on its agenda today. Not on its. Not on anything today. You just want a general comment?
Yes.
Under 5?
Yes.
We'll come down. We will recognize you, Laura. Laura Schwartz, on 5.
Yes, can you hear me? I'm Laura Schwartz from Cambria. Okay. And we've been to many of these meetings, my husband and I, and we come from beginning to end. We've sat here. We've been complimented to be from being here from beginning to end. We've gone to all the water meetings, all the everything that we possibly can see. We have seen Amanda at all these meetings, okay? She's been involved in everything since I've been up here. She was chairman of NCAC, did a fine job, could lead it. And what I'm saying here is the public perception at this point is not good. It's like leaders won't step down, even though this is a democracy. We would like to have the I'm upset about this, as you can tell. Her constituencies need to be heard equally as everybody's. Everybody else has rotated. We've sat here through years, and everybody has rotated. This is the only time we've seen it hasn't, and I'm really disappointed on that. She was elected like every other officer. She had as many votes as everybody, and I really think that the perception, the public perception, is that the leaders won't step down. That's not how it goes. It's like our president now. If he won't step down, even though somebody else is elected, there's something wrong with this process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, moving to the general manager's report, item 6A, the manager's report, General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. I'm going to go ahead and go over my manager's report. I have a brief PowerPoint presentation. And if it's okay with Madam President and the board, I'd like to have Patrick talk a little bit about the finance manager's report. Let's keep it, not that I want it on me, but put up my presentation when I'm done giving the presentation. If you could put it back on, because I won't be here till about another 10 minutes, so I think it's important that we capture any interaction between the general manager, the public, and the board. So thank you very much, AGP. The sustainable water facility remains operational. Staff continues to closely monitor well levels and the gradient mound. Cambria's sustainable water facility represents an enhancement to the environment while focusing on sustainability. Again, we put our email address here. It's still operational. I got my email address and Bob's email address. So if you want to tour the facility, come on down. We want to show you it when it's operational. I think that's important. I attended on behalf of the district the Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting on November 20th. The CCSD Sustainable Water Facility was discussed as part of is my time up? No. as part of a 1 year follow up. A Regional Water Quality Control Board, if you remember, a year ago November, they issued our Title 22 and Title 27 permits. So it was a follow up. The Regional Water Quality Control Board was very complimentary on the responsiveness of CCSD relating to the notices of violation on the original startup of the facility. If you remember, there were several things that we were brought to our attention, and we resolved those. And the Regional Water Quality Control Board commented on how we address those in a timely manner. The Regional Water Quality Control Board was also very complimentary to the CCSD relating to the significant reduction in wastewater treatment plant effluent nitrate levels. Historically, we've been running nitrates in the 30s and 40 milligrams per liter, leaving the wastewater treatment plant. In early December, we recorded a level of 1.54 milligrams per liter. Again, that's pretty low. So we're running well below 10 milligrams per liter. We continue to work with Advanced Technical Services, William Bellis, regarding the replacement of the Fiscalini tank. We all know that that tank needs to be replaced. It's way beyond its life. And so that process, we anticipate putting those bids out, those documents out to bid in January. We'll see where the bids come back. And then from a policy standpoint, the board will have to make a decision on how they want to fund that or when they want to fund that. A friendly reminder that we will be closed on December 24th and December 25th in celebration of Christmas, and then we'll be closed on January 1st, 2016 for New Year's holiday. We'll reopen back up on January 4th of 2016. President Robinette, CCSD consultants, and county staff continue to conduct weekly meetings relating to the EIR. As part of the agenda today, the meeting, the staff is recommending an ad hoc committee be formed regarding the EIR for the SWF. A lot of acronyms, but it's easier to do it that way. All the necessary paperwork. This is kind of a moot point. We got our check today, so that's. I'm not. We won't even talk about that. So that talks about the paperwork for the Grant 84, the overall financial, and I'll let Patrick comment on this. The overall financial. Financial position of the district continues to improve from a cash flow estimates. Additional information will be provided as part of the finance manager's report. You know, it wasn't too long ago, 4 or 5 months ago, we were saying we're going to end the year with about a $500,000 deficit. If you look on page 8 of Patrick's finance manager's report, it's looking that we'll finish June of 2016 at about $926,000. So that's about a $1.4 million turnaround. As Eric indicated, Chief Lewin is retiring after 37 years of service. We're going to miss you. And he's going to Santa Barbara, and he's going to be working with the Office of Emergency Management down there. And then Acting Chief Reeder is taking his place now, and he has 30 years of service. We continue to work closely with CAL FIRE and the fire department and CERT on public safety related matters, dead trees, and the anticipation of El Nino. I put CAL FIRE's website down here. I really want everybody to hone in on this, because if you go there, there is all kinds of helpful information about being prepared for the anticipated El Ninos that are coming. So if you go to their website, you'll be able to see where there are flood areas within Cambria that might be where you live, and there's all kinds of other information. I've enclosed the CERT newsletter in here. There's all kinds of helpful information about the CERT newsletter also. Again, helpful tips on how you can be prepared for when an El Nino comes, but not just an El Nino, but the high winds associated with storms, winter storms, could knock out our power for several days. So CERT did a really good job on compiling some information on how to prepare for that. There is a CERT training opportunity that I promised that I would bring up. I've also included a flyer about that. I would encourage anybody who wants to become CERT certified to attend this training. It requires a pre-registration, but I put a flyer in my general manager's report. The local hazard mitigation plan, this is kind of old news too. As I generate these reports, a lot of things happen. On Tuesday, the county approved a grant application, and part of that grant application was for money for Cambria for the local hazard mitigation plan. So been a lot of back and forth on where we are on the status of that. So the county took a formal action to submit that application. And from what I've heard from staff, it's favorable that we'll get that money and we can start on that process. I want to take a moment to acknowledge Monique Madrid and her recent designation as a certified municipal clerk with the International Institute of Municipal Clerks. Monique, although currently filling the role of two full-time positions, took the initiative to become certified. Monique will now be working on her master's level of municipal clerk certification. So it's a big deal. Our previous clerk, as far as I know, was not certified, but Monique is now certified. So I just want to thank Monique and recognize her with the board and the community and just say good job, Monique. We're going to be starting the budget process a little bit early. I've asked the budget committee to meet in anticipation of this influx of $4.1 million. I'm out ahead of it. I want to make sure that the budget committee comes back and reports to the board on how much exactly we owe to CDM Smith, how much was taken out of reserves, and we'll ask them for some policy guidance regarding that influx of money. And I've also asked my department managers, which I ask all of them to put everything on hold while we're in this challenging financial situation. I asked them to prepare for me a list of items that are crucial to public health and safety and also from an operational perspective. So if there is a pump that needs to be replaced and we have to do it and it's in the budget, if there's a motor, if there's something the fire department needs, I want those to be resurrected and brought to our attention at the budget committee level, and then we'll discuss what we can afford to do and what we can't afford to do. AGP, if you could go ahead and put, I have some slides. This is not my year-end presentation. I'll do that next year. But I just wanted to continue to just provide the board and the community with some information on some of the improvements we're making. It doesn't capture everything because we'd be here for quite a while. So, and I'll just ask you to do next slide if you go ahead and put that up. And I'm going to talk about facilities, resources, wastewater. So this is the facilities and resources. I'm sure some of you hiked the bridge out there. I should have showed you the old bridge first. But this is the new bridge and the facilities and resources department. I don't know how to work this thing. and then that's the new bridge. So next slide, please. I'll show you the old bridge. That's the new bridge again. Next slide. That's the old bridge. So it was a real safety hazard. And they took it out. They rebuilt it. Volunteers from FFRP and our facilities and resources department did it, put new handrails on. It's a brand new bridge. Really happy to do that. Did it all in-house. Thanks. Appreciate everybody's help on that. Next slide. This is our wastewater treatment plant, and everybody's probably going, so what are you showing me a picture of this for? It's a primary treatment facility. This is our second. This is our effluent going out of the plant, and it's clear water. It's really, we're sending out a good quality water right now. Ongoing maintenance on these tanks. Next slide, please. This is the same tank. Those are flights. Those are weirs down in there that you see. You can see about 6 to 8 inches or a foot down in the water. That's a chain-driven flight mechanism. Those have all been replaced so far. The wear guards have been replaced. The gears have been replaced. And the motor assemblies have been replaced. What we still need to do on these clarifiers is put a fail-safe system in a torque. When those chains get bound up, it'll automatically kick it off. So ongoing maintenance, the guys took these down and took them apart and put them back together has never been done. So this is kind of the ongoing maintenance that has been that needs to continue to happen with the district. So next slide. Again, it's a shot of the new weirs. You can see that white thing right there. That's a new weir that goes across, and we replaced those. Next slide. This is the aeration basins. What we did is we modified the aeration basins. We're taking activated sludge, that stuff you see in the tank there. We're pumping it from one side of the tank to the other. The side of the tank you don't see is a side that we reduced the oxygen in significantly. and that's where we've created the anoxic zone, and we're pumping low dissolved oxygen activated sludge back to the head of the plant, and those bugs are hungry and they're starved and they're denitrifying the plant. So this is something that we put in place, staff, Bob and Orlando and myself, and that's reduced the nitrates significantly. This is one thing that, this is the backbone of the SCADA system that we're starting at the wastewater treatment plant. You need to be able to control your pumps. If you look at that 188.9 gallons per minute, you have to be able to know what you're recirculating. You have to know your dissolved oxygen levels to run a wastewater plant. You can't just, and so what we're doing is, the next thing we want to do is we want to install dissolved oxygen meters with probes that'll interface to this and that'll interface to the motors. And so essentially what those probes will do is they'll send a signal to this, and that'll send a signal to the motors, and it'll slow the motors down. And what that'll do is it'll create a better run plant and a better quality effluent. And those graphs you see on the right-hand side, those are real-time information, and we can print historical reports anytime we want. So this is the backbone of the telemetry system that we're starting at the wastewater plant, similar to what we did at the water plant. Next slide. Those are just some more screens within that. Those will all be eventually tied into the different components within the plant that allows you to go into this screen, this computer, if you will, and make any adjustments that you need to do. Next slide. This is some of the graph capabilities. You can see that this is the influent flow and the effluent flow. Why is that important? It'll help us in when we design the next plant. We're gathering information on peak flows. We can see when peak flows happen to the plant. We can chart those, and we can design and build a plan accordingly. We'll want to monitor during heavy rains to see if we have a problem with influent INI intrusion and infiltration. But more importantly, you want a constant flow, if you can, coming into your plant. So that's where the design of equalization basins would be helpful instead of having surges. And as you can see, there's a low point, and then the lift stations kick on, and it hits it with a big amount of flow. And from a biological perspective, you don't want that happening to your plant. So as we design the plant and we move forward with the plant, you're going to want to be able to take this information and use it to design a plant that's going to do what you want it to do, essentially. Next slide. This is in the motor control center. This is the computer screen right there that kind of leads to everything else, the backbone of the operations. Go ahead. Another one, that's what this does is this is a separate system that will allow us to, you can go up or down right now. We can control the dissolved oxygen in the tank. So this is the digester. I don't know if you've ever been on the wastewater plant or if you live up on the hill and you look down. It's not supposed to have like a putting green on it like that other stuff. You know, it's not supposed to have grass growing on it. It's an aerobic digester. It's not an anaerobic digester. It means air. So in a wastewater plant, you need three things. You need food, which is your influent coming in. You need air, which is your dissolved oxygen. And you need to waste a percentage of your solids off every day. So we waste into this digester. And that digester had never been cleaned out. That scum on there, that layer. So we got on there with the backhoe. We dug everything out. This is part of the ongoing maintenance. These are the things that need to continue to be done to support the infrastructure and the water and wastewater facilities that really belong to all of us. You can't see those catwalks, but we're not even allowed to walk on them right now because they're just in such bad need of repair. So we've roped those. We brought all this all the way down. The guys in there are at the bottom of the digester. We drained it all the way, and those pipes were broken down there, which means we could not aerate the digesters properly, or we could not supernate off them, which means we couldn't take the clear water off those and put it to the back of the plant. So we brought the digester all the way down and replaced those pipes, and that was done in-house by staff. There's another shot of the digester, and let's go back to the digester. Can we go back to the digester? So when the report was given to the board on $6.7 million of repairs, part of that was the replacement of these digesters. I'm not necessarily sure that they need to be replaced at this point. What I'm thinking what we could do is probably go in and cut all that stuff out of the top of it and put some new catwalks in there and maybe seal these things. But we'll have to get a metal expert in there and determine if the if the tanks are worth salvaging or not. But I would rather go that route to try to salvage them than instead of just bulldozing them down and spending, I think it was $700,000 on new tanks. So we're going to try to, I would recommend trying to salvage these first, but we'll have to work with the engineers on that and to see if that's a viable option. Next, only a couple of slides left. This is a fire department. I asked Eric to include some fire department photos, and this is them training. Laying hose is the most important one of the most important components when you get to a fire is laying the hose and making sure that that the engineer on site who is running that pump, you have a firefighter, an engineer, and a captain, making sure that they have the training that's necessary to hook it up and make sure that the pump is working properly. A fire truck is just, everything is just built around a big giant pump, and that's how it works. So next slide. It's the same thing on deploying the hose. You have to make sure the hoses are put in there right, and you have to make sure that they come out right. If they're not put in there right, it slows down the ability to pull them out. And if they're not put back right, it just snowballs. And I learned this from Eric. I didn't know that. I thought you could just put the hose in the back of the truck and that was it. And so I've learned a lot from CAL FIRE and our firefighters on the proper way. And this is part of the training. And if you notice, they're in turnout gear. They're not in their uniforms. When you're doing training, you need to have everything on because you need to recreate the environment in which you'll fight a fire in. So they have their Scott Air Packs on. They have their turnout gear on. That stuff's not light, but that's how you train. So next slide. To take it a step farther, you need to train in an environment and lay a hose where you have all your turnout gear and your equipment on, but you also need to make sure that you're in physical shape to be able to get to the top of the stairs for a whole plethora of reasons, but that's part of the training that the fire department's doing. So appreciate Eric's leadership in this and making sure when they came on board, one of the things I wanted them to evaluate was to make sure that everybody is receiving the proper training and that their certifications are up to specs and everything like that. So I know that's a lot of information, but I try every month to bring this to the board because I want to show the community where, you know, we deferred things for a long time, deferred maintenance, and I'm not, you know, I'm not going to look in the past. I'm just going to look to the future. But we need to address a lot of these maintenance issues. There should be another slide on the water side, a couple of water slides. Here's our EWS. Again, we have facilities tours of this facility. That's our, not EWS. I'm sorry. It's our sustainable water facility. Next slide. There's some more instrumentation. It's a very complex system. Next slide, please. This is a Filtronics plant. If you remember when the drought was hit, the board authorized me to spend $500,000 initially before we moved forward with the plant. This was the old Filtronics plant out at the rodeo grounds, if you all remember that. This has been completely rebuilt. All those yellow things are fail-safe systems. They're all electronic valves. They're all interfaced with probes and monitors and things like that. So we rebuilt SR1 and SR3. We're still using SR3 wells. We completely rebuilt those, and we completely rebuilt the Filtronics plant. Next slide. That's the filter vessel. Next slide. There's the Filtronics plant. That was one that was decommissioned a long time ago, and we've recommissioned it. We've rebuilt all that stuff, and the room behind there is the control room, and it's got all the goodies in there, the brains of the operation, if you will. Next slide. These are the holding tanks, the backwash tanks for the filters. That tank on the right, you see a new concrete pad. We completely replaced that. And the reason we had to is when this system was decommissioned, somebody had left a electric wire hooked up, and what happened is it just corroded the whole tank. So it had an electrical current going into the metal for about 10 years, and it just pretty much ate the whole tank away. So we decided to go ahead and put a concrete pad and put a new tank in place and paint these. It looked really good. So this is the most recent project that we did. This is the filter media inside. Those are the bottom of the filter media for the Filtronics plant, and we replaced that. And that was part of that grant we received. The previous grant we received for, I think, about 100, and I'm not sure how much it was. Bob knows. I got too many numbers going through my head, but 200 and something. But 260. But that we replaced the media and all that stuff in the bottom, so we'll have a media in the Filtronics plant that'll run for many years, actually. That's it. So I know it was a long presentation, but answer any questions that the board may have.
It's a very informative presentation, too. It's a very good update. Before questions, we have a request for public comment. And so on 6A, we have Tina Dickinson.
Tina Dickinson, I found it quite remarkable that in today's agenda, nothing was addressed about the erroneous zip codes and the fact that the district now has to send out a notice to all of the 4,557 folks who were who received the original notice of November 13th. It came to my attention that at least two people never received the rate increase notice, and Ms. Madrid told me that you use the county's list. Why isn't the county's list checked with the billing list? Because two folks, two separate addresses, lived here for years, did not receive their rate increase notice until they contacted the district, and then I believe as soon as they had done that, they got it the next day or the day after. So that, I'm wondering how many others might have gotten missed out. Anyway, as far as the proposed rate increases, I'm getting conflicting reports from a director and the general manager. My understanding is that the monies from the proposed rate increases cannot be spent for the and I'm going to still call it the EWS, because I really don't know what in the heck it is with all the different terms it's had. So then a director said recently in a public meeting that monies from the rate increases can be spent on the EWS, and I'm very confused about that because I thought the three charges already were addressing that. Okay, that's that. Now, the EWS monitoring results, the plant was off for 15 days in October. I get these from the regional board every month. September, it was off for 22 days, and I know it was just started up around the 20th, so that makes sense to me. But anyway, how many days exactly are we running it, and how many hours are we running it, and what are we getting from it? How much water are we getting from it? Now, one other item that Mr. Gruber mentioned in his manager's report was the wonderful work that Orlando, and I believe his last name is Archuleta, but I'm not positive on that. I see that Mr. Archuleta, or Orlando, because I'm not sure of the last name, is leaving as of December 31st, despite the amazing work, apparently, that he did on reducing the nitrate levels from 43 parts per million to, I think, just over 2. That was not mentioned. I see there are a couple of positions that are being advertised. I'm assuming the wastewater level 3 is indeed his. The other thing I want to note, let the board and folks in town know about, is that in that zip code mess, the notice from Mid-Peninsula, the first zip code on the first page, 94002, is Belmont, California, where we, you know, with some research, a little Googling, Tammy Rudock is the general manager of the water district there. But what's really interesting is there's a template. They're identical in the layout. So we've paid all this money to Bartlett and Wells, for Mr. Alex Handel to do this amazing job, and an ad hoc committee. And now this is at least two, and I know of a third agency in our county. Same thing. So I would like to know exactly what we're paying for, because this is a template. The headings are the same. The only thing, of course, is the differences in the data for the rate increase itself. Again, I have to shake my head at this board and this staff, and I urge again, Cambrians, do not give them another dime. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the only request, General Manager Gruber.
I'll let Patrick comment on the additional revenue to be used for the EWS. I'll let Bob comment on the part of the while the system was down, and let Tim comment on anything related to the Prop 218, if that's okay with Madam President. What I would say about the Prop 218 is I didn't include it in my manager's report because we were working on finalizing that renoticing all the way up to yesterday. We wanted to make sure that We all looked it over really good, and so that wasn't intentional. I did not include it in my report because the re-noticing of that, which I did fail to, has been mailed out to everybody. Everybody has an additional 45 days. It's now a 90-day Prop 218 notice, and so I don't see any disadvantage to that. I see that as an advantage to everybody who may have concerns. I also want to be able to use that opportunity that if anybody has any questions, that I can provide them information on some of the infrastructure needs that the district has. And I can provide educational information relating to the proposed rate increases. What I can't do is I can't promote it. I can't say that I support it one way or another. That's not really the role of the district or myself. But what I can do is I can provide educational information relating to the needs of the infrastructure.
Okay, thank you. And there is no question that everyone is regretful that the mistakes happened on the what was mailed out. There is no way that anyone, I think, isn't, that's a very unfortunate thing that happened. And yet we still have to make it correct and right, and we are going to do that. Then it's always interesting because there's always, on the other hand, there were people that were very not happy that had said, why are we having this on the 29th? Now, we are going to have a hearing, but then we're going to come back 45 days later and actually complete the process. So the people that felt that it was bad timing because of the holidays certainly have ample time now. But there's no question everyone is sorry that the zip codes got messed around. There's just no question about it.
And Madam President, if I could, Orlando, he has taken another position. It's a very lucrative position. It puts him geographically a lot closer to his family, his daughters. It's halfway between, so that's why he made the decision. But as people exit the organization on the wastewater side, I have a tendency to ask them, and being an ex-operations guy, I know, it's very frustrating for staff to work in an environment that's significantly been degraded over the years. And I'm not saying that to be negative. I'm saying that as your general manager, that he had the opportunity to go to a brand new state-of-the-art facility. Now, of course, we as a small community can't support brand new facilities. But what we can do is if we want to hire and retain and keep good people, I think at the minimum what we need to do is provide them a good a working environment. I would not expect any of my staff to be able to try to continue to Band-Aid the infrastructure together and to be able to sustain a certain level of morale. It's very difficult for them. And so I think it's important that I communicate that to you from Orlando. It was the same message I heard in part from a previous wastewater supervisor, a previous utility manager. It gets to the point where it's like banging your head against the wall. So I tell you that not out of frustration. I tell you that because we should be obligated to our water and wastewater staff to provide them with an infrastructure that wants them, that has them want to come to work and enjoyable and learn from and not be constantly in the catch-up mode. So I just share that with you because I think it's important. And as we look to the future, you know, we need to make sure that we have a good, reliable infrastructure, that pumps and motors and blowers and digesters and things like that aren't on their last leg, and that you're asking somebody to continuously, just try to do the best you can. They need the resources to be able to do that. We need the staffing to be able to do that. We need the money to be able to do that. This is a community asset, so I just thought I would just end with that.
Well, thank you. And you know, it is for him a job opportunity, but he has done so much, and with your support. But, you know, it is hard to find people that want to come to work when you tell them, well, your digester's on its last legs. That's very hard to attract people with that kind of setup. So we want to make sure that this next year that becomes a very important conversation, because we can't just keep Band-Aids and neglect and that cycle going. We have to do better for the community. Vice President Thompson?
Yes, Mr. Gruber. Several things. Firstly, Your presentation at the Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting was quite good, and I received a number of compliments from community members who were at that meeting, and they were also very impressed with the quality of your relationship with that board, and I think that's been very helpful in terms of our moving forward, so thank you for that. With respect to the Prop 218 process, I've received a number of inquiries from constituents, and basically my approach is to refer them to the PowerPoint presentation on the CCSD's website, which I think provides a very good explanation of the need for the water rate increase. I'm a little bit disheartened by some of the literature which keeps coming in with my Tribune from something called Cameroons for right. And what I find what I take issue with is that when I run a campaign, I need to put my name on the campaign. I need to fill out a campaign statement reflecting who contributed to my campaign. And so these community members would like to know who is it that's paying for all this advertising that's going forward in opposition to the Prop 218.
I would prefer you don't interrupt. I don't know if you're on Cameroons for Fiscal Responsibility. I don't know anything about it.
I've seen an email where it's very clear.
Would you?
And he names.
You know, you place me in a position where it's difficult. I want to be polite to you. I don't like for you to be interrupting.
I don't like what Mr. Thompson had to say.
If all of us in the... This is a meeting. This is not a casual conversation.
No, it isn't.
We would like for you to be as respectful as the other people in the audience. Thank you.
He's referring to me, and I take issue with that.
You have the last word, don't you? Now let's go on. Okay. Mr. Carmel.
Did you want a brief comment on Bartle Wells and their role in the process? As you know, it wasn't the template that we paid for. We used that template in all Prop 218 protest proceedings. It was the underlying study, the water and sewer rate study, which is highly specialized skill. That's what Alex Handler did. The tail end of it is the notice, and unfortunately there were some mistakes in the notice, but that's not what we paid for. We paid for a very sophisticated analysis that ultimately determined what rates we would be requesting.
And I think that one other thing we might do in the future, there's always lessons learned. This is another opportunity. When we do have something that goes out and the public needs to send it in, it probably is a good idea, even as an extension of the ad hoc, if we ask some of our fellow Cambrians to sit down maybe with the ad hoc before it actually goes out or whoever, and do one more final proof before it goes to the printer. I think these are things we would want to do in the future and involve some people and help us with that, too. Director Rice?
I'm frankly upset about the mistake also, and the notice was provided. The mistake was in the one that was provided to the full board. I was urging, as a member of the ad hoc committee, and the other member is not here today, and so I'm not going to speak for him, but for the committee, I was urging that we take a moment and slow down. We were trying to get it done so it would be done before the end of the year and not have it be delayed. Now it's been delayed a full billing cycle, and we could have done that at the outset. I'm not saying I told you so, that we were rushing, because I've been advocating it probably since the day I got elected that we needed to do something about our rates being adjusted. And we purposely split apart the rate increase that was specific for the emergency water treatment plant so that folks would have a chance to voice their opinion about paying for that plant. The next one got delayed a bit more than we probably would have liked. The analysis was important. We had two meetings here that were public meetings, and I think there were a total, along with Kathy Tanner, there were a total of four people at one and three at the other one. If people want to have a conversation with a board member or with the full board, I'm sure since this has been pushed out to February 12th, if the community would like to have something like that, I would like to hear from you. I certainly am not going to advocate planning for another meeting of the ad hoc committee to explain how we got the numbers we did or why we picked the basis and the assumptions for those rates where we did, because we did actually keep it as low as we possibly could. But I'm perfectly willing to spend the time and energy to do it if people want to come and have the discussion. It's not about spending about bells and whistles. This is a significant rate increase. I agree with Mr. McKinnon. It is significant. It also is absolutely needed, and we parsed those numbers and got them lowered and lowered, and there was a mistake on the notice. These things happen, especially when you're in a rush. Hopefully, not everything we do has to be an emergency. So that said, if you are interested, please email the board and let us know that you want to have another workshop or some kind of discussion about the rates. I'm also available individually to let you know where I stand on it in terms of what needs to be done. We do need the rate increase. This is not about paying people over the top, or this is about covering our expenses for what they actually are. I'm excited about the check that we've now received, and I'm glad to hear that we're going to have a discussion on the reserves policies, because I think it's critical as to where is that money going to go, which parts are already spoken for, which parts can we replace the money that we took out of the money that we had in LAIF. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation about that policy. Just a few other things. When I see SWF, I think single white female. Can we please try and find an acronym and stick with it? I know it's kind of hard, and we're trying to meet some of the things that are touch points for the folks that are decision makers as far as when it comes to permitting and money. But let's have a discussion about it, because it makes a big difference, and here's why it makes a difference. That treatment plant relies, at least in part, on the effluent from our wastewater treatment plant. Our wastewater treatment, the quality of the water that comes out of the back of that plant is critical, because we need good quality to go into the, I mean, yes, it is an advanced treatment system, but it still has to have a certain level of quality that we're expecting and that it was designed for. So that means that we no longer really have two separate things. We have a system that includes the wastewater and the water. And I know that the general manager has talked about doing cross-training between water and wastewater department staff, and maybe that's something we need to go back and revisit. I also know that we don't have a very good asset management program right now in terms of which things have gotten replaced, which things are due to be replaced, which things are due to be maintained. We just had to replace a pump on SR4. I hope what we're doing with the SR3 is that we're also making sure that there's no MTBE, right? Are we doing any of that MTBE testing from those wells that were installed back in the day?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you. I'm very glad to hear that. One of the things that I'm a little confused about still, and this is something that I can probably take offline, but is probably good for the public to know too. I see those well levels still going down, down, down in San Simeon, but we're using the Advanced Water Treatment Plant, EWSS, whatever you want to call it. At the moment, let's call it Cambria's treatment plant. But the well levels are still going down. And I also would like to know how SR3 affects our well levels, especially the ones that restrict when we can and cannot pump on Santa Rosa Creek. And like I said, I know it's probably complicated answers, But it's kind of important to know. I mean, we put that thing in hopefully so that we could mitigate some of that drop in the wells on San Simeon Creek, right?
Oh, those are really good questions. Let me try to answer those, and they relate to some of the earlier questions I heard. We're really fortunate. We have an outstanding operating group, you know, wastewater and water, and they're limited in how many there are, the staff. And, you know, the water department, Justin Smith and his group, they do they're trying to do as economical an approach as possible to running that plant. So, for example, it was designed to be able to run 24/7. Okay. If they do that, they're going to hire more staff or pay overtime to run it at night. I know that plant likes to run continuously from talking to the operators, but they do match its operation to their normal schedule. So it runs about 8 hours a day right now instead of 24/7. So what Justin will do is he'll have his finger on the pulse of the differential between the well field at the perk pond where the treated effluent is percolated in the ground versus the upstream well field. And that he keeps a positive gradient now between that upstream well field being higher than the downstream well. So he looks at that, and that the new facilities operate and maintaining that as a positive level. The other thing he looks at is, you know, how much storage do I have now? Do I need to run it more often or not? So he is fine-tuning that thing on a regular basis to make it run as economical as possible. So it hasn't run every day of the, you know, as long as it could, as long as it's capable of. So there are times when he's using some storage, and that's why you see the level creeping down a little bit in San Simeon rather than running the thing much more than it's effectively being run right now. There have been a few little warranty issues that came up. I know in October they had an instrumentation warranty issue that had to be repaired where it was offline for about 3 or 4 days. So that's the gist of it right now without having Justin here to go into a great level more discussion than that. But essentially he's using storage. He's trying to run it as economically as possible, and it's not running 24/7. So I did see where October, the system went on around September 20th after being off for several months, and I did see just by the shape of the curves in October where there was improvement from that thing coming back on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you have to be pretty close to the numbers and kind of used to looking at the graphs to see that little change and the rate of decrease and how it kind of flattens out in that period of time. And there are so many variables from year to year. It's tough to make a comparison because you have rainfall variabilities, you have demand variabilities, but we're still gathering data. But I think, again, the water department's doing an outstanding job.
And, so is it helping us?
Yes, it is. It definitely is. Yeah, I could see the change, especially in October where the level started flattening out, where typically they're just starting to drop like a rock. So, you know, it is. I hope that helps you in kind of general terms. I don't have all the reports with me.
It absolutely
today,
does. And I would hope that this board would set a priority to have the utilities committee either become standing or meet on a regular basis, because it looks like there's been a lot of things that essentially had to be upgraded and probably no small amount of money spent on those things at the wastewater treatment plant. And I'm hoping that those things are things that don't end up getting tossed out because we have to redesign the plant and we're in that process kind of also. So I'm hoping that all of those things are kind of working together, and I don't really need a response right now. I'm just hoping that what happens is that we start respecting that we need to make a priority not just on our new toys but in maintaining our old ones. And that means sometimes that we have to figure out ways to cut back in some places so that we can manage the system that we already have, the pumps, the lift stations, all of the telemetry that we need to have installed that I think is probably part of that cost that was the big cost about the redesign. So some of that cost should come down, I'm hoping, is kind of what I'm thinking. Is that true, Mr. Gruber?
We'll continue to, you know, reevaluate that $6.7 million, but One of the things that I mentioned in my general manager's report is the Regional Water Qualities Control Board's willingness to suspend the TMDL study. And so, and the reason they did that is because the nitrate levels we've been getting out of the effluent, but they also said that they want to be able to see us implement our own denitrification, and then they'll determine where we go from there. So it's a fluid process. Everything that we've gone and everything that we've introduced so far down there will continue to be able to use. It's not that we're going to put something in place and then have to take it back out.
Okay, thank you. Madam President, I just have one more thing, and I just want to read this so that it keeps me kind of on track. We still have a big project ahead of us now that we have a sustainable water treatment plant that enhances our resiliency in drought. Now we have to do the part that usually gets done first, which is the environmental impact study. Up to this point, our frustrations seem to be aimed in the general direction of agencies whose help we need. If it weren't for the drought, true, this project wouldn't already be constructed, but it is constructed. And if you're going to take advantage of the drought to build the project, we should also take advantage of the drought and the offers of help and the attention that's coming toward us because we're building this plant by the various agencies, and not just the Coastal Commission, but the Water Board, the Fish and Game, I mean, everybody that wants to help us out. Cambria is under a microscope, and not just for the usual reasons, but because what we're doing here is potentially a solution for a lot of communities over the entire state that are suffering right now because of this drought. Not just places along the coast, but places inland. They want to know if this thing's going to work. We should make sure that it's going to work, and hopefully it's something that they can replicate. But that means that we have to do it right, even though it's inverted, cart before the horse, however you want to say that. Actually having the project built and then doing an EIR with the impacts and mitigations spelled out means that we can use real data to evaluate it, whether or not those impacts are actually happening the way we expected them to, whether or not the mitigations are addressing those impacts appropriately and effectively. We can use real data instead of some theoretical idea of what might happen or what might not happen in terms of impacts and how we can mitigate them. Once a project like this is signed off on, normally, when you do the EIR first, and those of you who consider yourself environmentalists and everyone else who's involved in any planning or any development anywhere in this area will recognize this, that once the project is final, that's it. Getting conditions of a compliance to be actually complied with can be a little bit like pulling teeth. They didn't comply with this condition. Well, what usually happens? Well, if you can get an agency's attention because a condition isn't being complied with, that's one thing. Sometimes the agency doesn't have the manpower to follow through and make sure that it does get complied with. It isn't exactly easy to compel a project to comply with the conditions, especially if it's a relatively minor adjustment that would make a huge difference in the habitat, a huge difference to the town, but very little difference to the agency. This is our opportunity. An EIR is an opportunity, and we have to look at it like that. We need to be using the data that we're actually collecting, and we need to collect more data probably, and I know we don't have the staff to do it, but let's get it collected. And I'm glad to hear that we're getting the telemetry online with the wastewater treatment plant so that we can keep the data on the flows. That will help us into the design, I would imagine. Actual data is a good way to design things. I'm not sure why the EIR has taken such a long time. I haven't been in any of the meetings that our president has been in, and only hear secondhand about the administrative draft of the EIR. And correct me if I'm wrong, but last September, not just a couple months ago, but a year ago, we had a draft mitigated negative declaration and comment letters from virtually every regulatory agency whose corroboration we need. And I believe the board that Mr. Sanders was on spent at least 8 years and four tasks to develop a water master plan that was also a program EIR that we should be able to tier off of. So between the fact that we have a program EIR we can tier off of, the fact that there was already a mitigated negative declaration, the fact that all of the agencies had given comments, I don't know what's taking so long to put everything together. It seems like you shouldn't have had to start from scratch to begin with. The whole point of doing that program EIR, correct me if I'm wrong, was so that we could tier off, so that we wouldn't have to start from scratch, and that appears to be what has been happening. I only hear secondhand, and I've not been any of those meetings. But frankly, as uninformed as I am, I'm upset that it's taking so long, and probably in no small amount of money. On top of that, if you don't pursue the right question, you're not going to get the right answer. If you ask the wrong question, you might get a right answer to that wrong question, but you're not going to get a solution to the problem you're trying to actually solve. Just getting a CDP, I don't think it should be our goal. I think our goal needs to be getting our system into a situation where it is a healthy system that is well maintained and provides good resource and is easy to manage, so that our water and wastewater is well managed, so that our environment is protected, and so that people, if they want to, can water their roses in a drought, because that's kind of the system we're trying to design here, if I'm not mistaken. This board should be setting vision, and we need to have some more vision. And we need to set a higher standard, because a CDP, there's a lot of steps to getting to a CDP, and I don't think that it's going to take overnight. I think it's probably going to take even more than one more year to do it. Just because we didn't do it first doesn't mean it's not going to take as long as it would have taken. Just because we have the plant there, that's an advantage for us, because we can actually use data and we can make sure any adjustments that need to be made so our impacts are mitigated. How lucky are we that we can do that? I only see us getting one report a year, though, on the habitat. So, I mean, there's still a lot to be done on this, and I know that we have the advantage now of somebody who's very experienced in EIRs and who was very instrumental in developing the Water Master Plan, and I'm thankful for that reason to have Mr. Sanders on this board, because I think that some of the insights that we need have not been here at this point, or at least not have been up and listened to. I really hope going forward we can look at this system as being one system. It's not the water and the wastewater. It's our system that manages our resource. And right there is the person who we've hired to do that. I'm sorry to hear that Orly's leaving, and I'm looking forward to hopefully next year getting on top of putting something together so that the next person doesn't feel like they have to leave because we're not paying attention to what needs to be done. We don't even have a plan for what needs to be done. That's my guess. There was no roadmap. We need to make a roadmap. Let's do it.
Any other comments, discussion? Okay, then that we need to move then to 6B. And we have public comment for 6B. And that is Jerry Wood.
Good afternoon, President Robinette and board. My name's Jerry Wood. I'm with Cambria. This is just going to be a quick update on our petition to retain Cambria Fire Department as its own department. We are continuing with our efforts to acquire signatures. At this point, we have in excess of 400 signatures that have been collected. This number represents approximately 6.7% of the Cambria population, 10.1% of the registered voters in Cambria, and 13.7% of the voters who actually voted in the last CCSD election. We are continuing to wait for any additional ad hoc committee meetings, which results should be forthcoming shortly, even though I understand that the initial thing was by the end of the year, but with all the changes and that are happening, I could easily understand that it's going to go into next year. And I think it's a critical thing, so that's another thing we don't need to rush on. We need to think it out properly and carefully and gather all the information we can. And so when we have the additional ad hoc committee meeting, we're looking forward to that. And on a personal note, I would like to wish all of the board members and the citizens of Cambria a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Moving to ad hoc.
Yeah.
Let's move to the, we have ad hoc committee reports, which that was kind of your committee report too, I think, but or other related board member reports. So on 6B, let's have that, and then we'll be taking, I think, just a little stretch and break right after that. So on ad hocs, who is reporting this time? Vice President Thompson.
Thank you, and thank you for that, Jerry. We're having one more meeting discussion with CAL FIRE and our budget staff to look at the numbers, and then I anticipate that we will be preparing a report which will be forthcoming, I would guess, by mid-January, and so we can put this whole discussion to rest. One other report, and that's with respect to the PROS Commission. They met on December 1st, and I guess the most significant discussion had to do with the filling of the vacancy. There were several members there that are interested, and so the commission will be coming forward with a recommendation at the next meeting. The filing period is still open, I believe. Is that correct, until the 28th? Well, it is still open, so if anyone is interested in being considered, please submit the application. Mr. Niffen, who is a member of the commission, also announced that the Cambria Youth Athletic Association has received a $5,000 donation to build the first field on the community park. And so they will be holding those funds until such time as we're ready to move forward with the development of the fields. And Mr. Niffen feels that other donations would be forthcoming, and this is just the seed money, the first money that that they will need to put the field in place. And that's my report, Ben.
Another meeting, Director Rice, or Director Sanders?
Director Sanders and I are on the Water Conservation Committee, and we had a meeting with the General Manager, and the main focus of the meeting was surrounding folks that are requesting waivers of surcharges. The outcome of that was giving a little bit of direction to staff, but also that the committee should come back together to review whether or not those surcharges are appropriately placed and should continue based on our water usage. We are still subject to the governor's 25% reduction proclamation that he made related to the drought and across the entire state. We were getting, apparently, Patrick was dealing with quite a few people requesting waivers for a lot of various reasons, and we were able to give him some direction, but we may need to come back to the board with some specific directed policy that is then written and encoded so that the general manager and the finance officer don't have to spend a lot of time reviewing things because there's a policy in place. Did I miss anything?
Well stated.
Okay. Then I have one report. It was a meeting that I attended yesterday with General Manager Gruber. Senator Monning was here, our senator for this area, and he met regarding the risk to the community with our forest and forest fires, but then the risk to the Monterey Pine Forest, too. And it was a very good conversation. We met at the Cambria Fire Department, the CCSD Fire Department, and it was also attended by Deputy Chief Reeder, who is here today. And Deputy Chief Reeder will also be acting chief when Chief Lewin finishes at the end of December, or tomorrow. Tomorrow. Okay, well, relax today. But but it was a very good meeting. It was also with Fire Focus, which has become a very active group, and it was really looking at how Senator Monning could help. And, of course, we all know when we have people like that here, what is the first thing we want always? We need what? In order to solve problems, we need money. And so we were talking about the number of trees that have been removed here, the number of trees that still need to be removed. How are we going to then dispose of them? How are we going to get to replanting? And I thought it was a very productive meeting. And so hopefully, and he certainly felt that there were some possibilities for some funding. They're looking at a few things that may benefit our community, and so we'll kind of stay tuned to what he has in mind. Okay, that's it. Did you have anything else?
Yeah, I just...
We're going to take our break.
Yes, I just had a question, hopefully a quick one for the general manager. With the head of the wastewater leaving and all the vacation days you had announced during your manager's report, when something, because nothing will, but when something inevitably happens, and I mean, we have people that are in place for the fact that he's not, I know we've been understaffed in those departments, and so I just want to make sure that we're not going to be completely wearing out everybody else that's left, because we definitely don't want to be running people off because they feel overworked. And we do have, like, I'm signed up for the Nixle thing for any fire things, and I never got a notice about the fire that was announced. And I mean, I don't know, I don't even know who to call, and I'm on the board when yeah. something happens. So it would be nice to know, or at least be informed in some way. I did get an email from Monique, I think, from a fire. Maybe that happens over the summertime. But I'm just saying the lines of communication don't seem to be open, and I just want to make sure that if somebody sees something and wants to say something, that they don't just get the answering service and then nothing happens.
Right. Well, I communicated to the board, president and vice president. So when something like this happens, you hire me as your general manager to put a plan of action into place, and that's exactly what I do. So when we found out yesterday when I came into the office, oh, fun day, huh? Which so we started formulating a plan, and what we did is we had a conference call today with FRM, which is Fluid Resource Management, and they've done a great deal of maintenance down at the wastewater plant, but they also have 22 certified wastewater treatment operators. And we held a conference call with their team today, general manager, operations folks, maintenance, and we explained the situation to them, and we'll be meeting with them Monday at the wastewater treatment plant, and we'll be bringing them. I anticipate bringing them on board only because of the short time span between the time that Orlando leaves. We're actually hoping that they can come on board and for a 90 to 120 day period while we do the recruitments. We're doing a recruitment for the plant supervisor and then also for a grade two, and that'll get us back up to full staffing. But on the interim, we're going to need a licensed operator, a grade three. They're familiar with the plant, and then I'm going to discuss with them also bringing in a grade two. Monique and I and the district engineer are also going to meet with the wastewater staff on Monday and bring a lunch down to them and tell them that it's going to be okay and we got a plan, and that so they're not overly stressed out. But I did communicate it to the board president and the vice president in email. That was a pretty fluid situation. We just got off the phone about 11:30 with them. But the plan is, within my authority as a general manager, I have certain expenditure limits mm-hmm. that I can go ahead and authorize. And to bring these folks on board to make sure we're meeting the regulatory requirements and the licensing requirements, I'll just go ahead and issue a purchase order, and then I'll be bringing this back to the board in January, and we'll use them for a 90 to 120-day period of time. So that was, and we looked at, during this time, we looked at other options, too. We reached out to the Regional Water Quality Control Board and other agencies, other temporary operators that are in the area. But I think our best choice, based on the short period of time, would go to fluid resource management. So the other thing is Ms. Dickinson indicated, we do have both those recruitments online. We reached out to the different organizations that, and so we hope to get a good pool of candidates. But in the interim, we'll bring these folks on board, and again, they're familiar with our system. And I really admire that they're going to come down on Monday. They're going to bring their team. If any board member would like to be there, they're going to have their team there. They're going to look at the plant. They've already asked for our waste discharge permits. We've sent that to them this morning. They've asked for our reports for the last year. We've sent that to them. And they've asked for a schematic of the plant, which we've sent to them already. So we'll be fully staffed. I anticipate working with district council the first of next week and being fully staffed by the first of next week.
Thank you. I appreciate that you have a plan in place for that. I still don't know where to call if I see something happening in the middle of the holiday season.
That'd be our answering service. Monique, do you have that number for?
It's just calling the office number. We get the answering service. But somebody's checking that, right? Because well, the answering service can't do anything for
me.
Yes,
they can. The answering service is a point of contact. And
okay.
Then the answering service has the standby people's phone number.
Okay.
So you always have a water and wastewater person on standby.
And those folks will have enough time to spend time with their families, I hope, even though they're going to be on call, I'm hoping. I just want to make sure that we're not wearing them all out. That's all.
Right. And that's why we're bringing FRN.
Thank you. I'm glad that you have a plan. Thank you for reassuring me.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you all very much. I think we have a well-earned little break for about 10 minutes. Nice visit. Okay, thank you very much. We are now moving to the consent agenda, and we have no request for public comment on that. So, do we have a motion?
Madam President, I move approval of consent calendar items 7A and B.
Second. You.
Okay, many attempts to move and second, so we're good. So moved by Director Sanders, seconded by Director Rice to accept the consent agenda.
A and B.
A and B.
A and B. We're going to talk about C. Thank you. Okay. Let's do a, we can just do a voice on this. All those in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Okay, now we are going to actually discuss and hear about item C. So, General Manager Gruber, or actually, I see we're going to talk. We will have our budget manager, Mr. O'Malley, go ahead and present that.
O'Reilly.
I just want to see if people were listening.
Oh, okay, Madam President, members of the board. We have a pay scale for our reservists that doesn't qualify under the new minimum wage law that was passed in the state of California effective January the 1st. The reserve firefighter, reserve recruit firefighter were $8 and $9 an hour. The minimum wage is now $10 an hour. So we've revised the schedule, bumping everybody up basically a dollar. So that we had to do the recruit $2 to get them to the minimum wage. But that's what we're proposing now, so that the schedule complies with California's minimum wage law. Were there questions?
Any questions on this?
I'd like to speak to the reason why I did pull this item.
Okay, thank you.
First, I'm glad that we're complying with the laws of the state. That's very good. But also, one of the reasons why I pulled this one is better than most on its fiscal impact, but it still ends up being a little bit confusing as to what the impact is on what we already had budgeted and whether this $5,088, which it looks like is for the rest of this fiscal year, right. if that's actually within what we are able to do. And if it's not within what we're, I mean, does that mean you're going to come back with a mid-year budget review?
Yeah.
So we don't know yet whether or not we can afford that $5,000?
That's correct. We haven't done any budget reviews so far for the current fiscal year. I'm right in the middle of doing that.
Okay.
And it's not a matter of whether we can afford it or not. It's a matter of whether we need to adjust the budget to accommodate that. We can afford it.
Okay.
We have enough general fund money, revenue, to support it, but I don't know exactly what the revised budget numbers need to be.
And the change is that I'm mostly concerned with isn't the one that brings them up to minimum wage, because frankly, I think minimum wage isn't nearly enough. But the other two going up, because I don't know how much of a difference those make. I mean, that extra dollar will make a difference to those folks, I hope. Mm-hmm. But I also don't know how many hours we're paying for these people, and I don't know if most of them are reserve lieutenants or some of them are
I think right now they're all just firefighters. Is that correct? They're all just
okay.
firefighters. But okay. regardless, it's a dollar an hour in any of the categories, and it's basically
right.
24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So that's where I came up with the number 10,176.
Okay, and so the impact, the actual dollar amount could be a different amount, just depending.
It shouldn't be. I
don't object to getting up to $10. We have to do that. It's the other two that I was more concerned about, whether or not that was going to be. I mean, they all have to be at least $10.
Right.
But we don't necessarily have to bump up the other two. It looks like that's just to keep as a hierarchy, right?
If we ever recruited those people, then they'd get more money. But right now, we don't have any of them.
Right now, we're just dealing with the firefighters level. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, are we ready for a motion?
I move approval of 7C.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
If we had more money, we should pay those guys more, but and ladies. I don't know if there's any ladies.
If we have more money, we can do a budget.
$15 minimum wage would be really what I would fight for, but this is not the time or place for that. So I just think that we need to do it.
Okay. All right. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Yes.
Director Sanders?
Yes.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Yes. Motion carries 4-0. All right. No hearings and appeals today, so into regular business. And item 9A, and General Manager Gruber, would you like to introduce this, please, or
yes,
please introduce
Madam President and board members, item 9A is discussion and consideration of safer grant staffing alternatives and options. We were asked to bring this back. And there is also is there a resolution included in this? Okay, there's a resolution included in this when you originally accepted the SAFER grant, you had adopted a resolution that said that no money would be taken from the general fund. So as an alternative, on one of these alternatives, it will require a small amount to be taken from the general fund. So I'm going to go ahead and read the recommendation, and then I'm just going to turn it over to Eric. He's been waiting here so patiently. But the recommendation, it is recommended the Board of Directors evaluate the alternatives presented in the attached SAFER issue paper and provide direction to the general manager regarding staffing levels. Please note that if available, alternative one is chosen, a resolution authorizing the use of general fund revenue will be required. And under the fiscal impact, alternative two and three utilizes only grant money that will not have any fiscal impact on the CCSD budget, and alternative one, as indicated above, will have impact on the CCSD budget and will require $7,509 of additional funding in conjunction with the grant money. With that, I'll turn it over to Chief Eric and have him talk about the rest, and we can talk about it and see which direction you guys want to go and direct us, and we'll get the process underway no matter what alternative you select.
Thank you. And Chief Shalhu?
Let's try that. Good afternoon again, President Rumnett and members of the board. So I was just going to brief you on the synopsis of the SAFER grant real briefly, and then go over each alternative. And then, of course, we can get into more details and questions if you'd like afterwards. So at the discretion of the CCS board, the Cambria Fire Department accepted the SAFER grant, which stands for Staffing Adequate Fire Emergency Response. We accepted that on September 10th, 2015. The total amount awarded was $396,525. That's for a two-year period. However, that leaves a significant shortfall of funding to hire three fully burdened firefighters at industry standard rates. So due to the shortfall of the awarded SAFER grant funding, we worked closely with the FEMA representatives to weigh all the options. And the FEMA representatives basically advised that for the 2015 grant cycle, there was no additional funds available. So we have to work with what we've been given. So this is all to have four folks on the fire engine on daily staffing to meet the NFPA 1710 standard. So with that, I was going to go through the options real quick, unless you have questions already. Good to go through the alternatives. So alternative one is to hire three firefighters. This option would require additional funds from the CCSD general fund, as General Manager Jerry Gruber said, of $7,509, with the minimum wage increase in January going up to $10 per hour. Firefighters could be compensated at minimum wage. This option would provide the greatest overall benefit to the community, organization, and personnel. NFPA OSHA requirements would be met most of the time, therefore improving firefighter and civilian safety. And again, that would take $404,034 to achieve that option one, which is obviously over the grant awarded. Alternative two would be to hire two firefighters. The firefighters would be compensated a salary range of 86% of the fire engineer's salary. NFPA and OSHA requirements would be met 66% of the time. Two of the three shifts would have four personnel on the engine. No general fund support is necessary. So what that means is when it says 66% of the time, I just want to let you know that there are no funds if somebody gets sick or injured. That 66% of the time is the best case scenario. So I just kind of wanted to make sure that you understand that. Alternative three would be to hire one firefighter at the rank and compensated of a fire engineer. The NFPA and OSHA compliance would be met 33% of the time. The firefighter could be brought in at a fully burdened salary comparable to the IFF Local 4635. No general fund support is necessary. So essentially we have three shifts. It would be an extra firefighter on one of those three shifts. And again, on the alternative three, it's got $220,853 is what it would cost. So I'm sure there's plenty of questions to go along with this.
Madam President, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Director Sanders.
Thank you. Under alternative one, Chief, can you better quantify what you mean by NFPA and OSHA requirements being met most of the time? Is it 90%, 80%?
So, again, in a perfect scenario, if everybody didn't get sick or there were no injuries, yeah. We would have four people on the fire engine 365 days a year.
100% of the time.
Correct. And in a perfect scenario. Again, yeah. We don't. If somebody gets sick or injured, we don't have the money to backfill that position to have that fourth person on there. And that pretty much goes for all the alternatives.
Can you speak to, from a firefighter's perspective, can you speak to the advantages of having four on an engine?
Sure. Without getting into too much detail, things happen that much quicker. So if you have one person on a fire engine, they're obviously doing everything on the fire ground that there's expected, you know, getting water, pulling the hose to the fire, et cetera, et cetera. Two, obviously that goes twice as fast. Three times as fast. Four. So things happen much quicker on the fire ground. You have the ability to also split crews, which is a definite advantage. So there's an OSHA rule out there that's called two in, two out. It essentially means that there's no life threat. You can send two firefighters in if there's a life threat, without two being a backup, and that's mm-hmm. a known life threat. If there isn't a known life threat, we're supposed to have two that go in and then two that are outside to back up that crew that is going in for the rescue. So that's also a huge advantage to have a four-person engine company. There are many, many others that I could speak to. I could spend more time doing that if you'd like, but that's just on the fire ground. So there's also medical aids that we go to that even though people think it shouldn't take that many folks, you know, we never know if we're carrying people down three flights of stairs or having to carry them up a flight of stairs or out a window. Et cetera, et cetera.
So just a follow-up question. Let's assume that there's a fire and simultaneously at the scene there's a medical emergency. I presume that a paramedic or an EMT is going to be taking care of the medical emergency while the other three are addressing the fire issue. So right away you're down one firefighter because that firefighter is preoccupied with the medical emergency, right?
That is definitely possible. I mean, there are many, many scenarios, but yes, that is definitely a possibility.
It happens more regularly than we would like to think, I
yes.
presume.
Yes. The advantage that you have in your town here is you do have the ambulance crew that's close by that
But sometimes, in fact, most of the time, CCSD fire is first on the scene, correct?
Correct.
Because of the very advantageous location of the fire department building. You're very close to Highway 1.
I don't know if it was most of the time, but you are correct. They are at scene. And it really depends on what each crew is doing and where they're located. They're not always in the station, but...
And the first few seconds into minutes when you're dealing with a medical emergency are the most critical, I presume.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. William.
Yeah. Chief, my inclination is to go along with spending an extra $3,500 a year out of the general funds to have the full complement of three, so that we could have four on for the entire for all shifts. Now, I guess what you will do will be to go to the reserve pool and offer these positions to the current reserves that are working with us. Is that
it is correct? Yeah. So we would hire out of our reserve pool, and then we would, of course, have to hire behind right. that.
Now, one of, as I gather, the difference between Alternative 1 and Alternative 2 is that the under Alternative 2, the firefighters will be paid more than they would under Alternative 1. Is that going to pose a problem in terms of getting personnel to want to accept the positions?
That is a difficult question to answer. It is something that we have thought about, but I think that we could still hire three people, if that's what you're asking. I think that we would definitely draw a pool.
So
we're looking at four to five right now is what we're thinking that would apply
so
for the position.
You think you'd have ready acceptance from personnel in the reserve pool for those positions?
Yes, sir.
I wanted to go along with that question from Vice President Thompson. Did you say $10,000 for 2 years?
Actually, you said 35, I think, but you meant 75. He meant 75, though.
Yes. What now? Because I read this several times, it was $7,509. Is that for 1 year or 2 years?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Correct. I guess I should be checking.
Is that correct?
That's correct. And I wanted to say something else. The way we calculated these amounts was based on every firefighter hired getting benefits at the highest level. So he's got to be married with three kids, and he's got to accept dental, the most expensive dental, and all that sort of stuff. And that's not likely to happen. So it's not likely that if you went with Alternative 1, it would actually go exceed the grant amount. It's just that in the worst-case scenario, it'll exceed it. But it's likely not to.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And we do have a request for public comment, but Director Rice also has some questions.
A couple of questions. First on, I thank you for asking that question, Vice President Thompson, about the ability to find folks that will work. That's a really low pay, even if you get benefits with it. And the benefits is kind of where some of my questions come in, because they are going to be considered full-time employees, but are the positions going to be considered permanent positions, or are they temporary? So they're temporary positions. Will they be hired and then fall into the same MOU? Do we have? I don't know what the difference between a firefighter, as they are referred to with the reserves, versus an engineer, versus a captain. I know we don't have any firefighters that are full time. Is that correct? We just have engineers and captains, and
that is
you.
Correct. Yeah.
So I don't, and paying PERS retirement on a temporary position. I don't know anything about employment law, and that's not my job. But I do know that a position that's temporary, it seems like there's some things that we should be offering, but other things that maybe we wouldn't have to. I just don't know about the way the rules are, and I know that there were discussions about this, that you were trying to figure out how to cover it all, but I just want to make sure, and I know the benefits probably is one of the ways you can attract people for less money. I'm kind of inclined to actually do it the other way, where we would have two extra folks, but I don't know about the scheduling. And it seems like, I don't know.
I'll speak to a little bit of that, and then we'll make,
thank you.
Unless you want to talk about them.
Is that a vague enough question for you?
Yeah.
Sorry.
The benefits that we show are required benefits, even for temporary if they're full-time. They're members of PERS. Even if it's only a temporary one-year appointment, it's required that they join PERS.
And so do we also have to pay for being part of the union?
No, that's not. We don't pay for anybody being part of the union.
Our reservists now, all our reservists are PERS employees.
Okay. No, that's not true.
No.
Not all reservists are PERS employees. Most reservists are not PERS employees. Yeah, and that's a good thing for the district. But these would all be PERS. And then if they are reservists and they go back to being reservists, once you're in PERS, you're always in PERS. So then they would be PERS employees.
So that's another financial impact that
so
we would
that,
have to consider.
To kind of clarify that, once you're in PERS, even if you leave? I had PERS at a university and I left and I didn't follow. But anyway, go ahead.
So did that answer your question?
So as far as
the MOU goes, or being being part of the union, they would not. It would be it's kind of caught between the full-time person and a reserve, if you will, in that they have a full-time schedule. They get full benefits. They'll be put on a shift with a shift captain.
And I'm all for full benefits. I'm just trying to see if these are things that
and
are required.
Just to
by
understand,
law.
It's run on a grant, on the SAFER grant, which is two years, and so at that point, it's up. So it's they work full time, but they're really temporary, if you will, unless the CCSD.
And we start folks even when they just brand fresh start with the district. They start with PERS. There's no probationary period or anything.
They don't actually have PERS when they first start, but if they come in as a reserve, let's say that they're a firefighter for another agency and that are PERS, and then they come to work for us, they're already in PERS, correct, and that's what happens a lot.
So we don't really have a probationary period on those situations because they're already a member in PERS or whatever. Is that true?
PERS requires if you expect them to work 20 hours a week on a regular basis, they're enrolled in PERS. That's a PERS law.
Thank you. That really helps clarify. I just didn't know.
Would you like me to try to answer what I think I heard as some questions? Okay. So they will be members of the MOU. They will be covered under the MOU. And what they won't be is subject to the same termination requirements because their positions will be contingent upon the grant funding. So they will fall under all of the other rules under the MOU. Sorry, Eric.
Okay.
So just a clarification then. On the PERS, once you're hired, you have PERS. And how much is that in this figure of 7,900 some? And that's for 2 years. And so if they always have PERS, once the 2 years is up, who's paying for it? You just don't pay for it then?
Yeah, when you're working, the employer and the employee both make a contribution. When you stop working, there's no more contribution. I mean, if you're not working, there's no contribution by either side. If you worked enough, then when you're 55 or 50, when you're 50, once you can retire, then you can start drawing retirement based on whatever you actively work. But if they work for 2 years and they're part of PERS and then they quit, they're not in PERS anymore.
So it just has 2 years of credit, so to speak.
Right, they get 2 years of credit.
And unless they go to work for another agency that offers PERS, then that 2 years just sits there. Unless they go to another agency that provides PERS.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And I have another question for Patrick, if you don't mind, please, President Robinette. I'm looking at Alternative 1 and Alternative 2, and it looks like the estimate that we've given, the total per firefighter, on the Alternative 1, it doesn't change, but Alternative 2, it does change? $4,000 or something?
I'm sorry, what now?
Alternative 2, the difference between the total per firefighter first year is $96,886, and total per firefighter second year is a larger number.
Right.
But in alternative one, that doesn't, they're the same. Busy, can you tell me if there's a reason for that?
I'm trying to, yeah, the second one is because they get a step increase after, if they're members of the MOU, after a year they get a 5% step increase. And I'm trying to remember why that didn't happen the first time.
So maybe it's just maybe it just needs to be added in or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Which could bring it up to more than $7,000 theoretically.
Yeah, it would bring it up a little bit. But for some reason, I'm thinking there was a reason for that, and I can't remember what it was. Well, I apologize.
And I'm just going to say, as a board member, it would be great to have them three shifts, and it makes it much easier, I'm sure, for scheduling. But my concern here is that we have firefighters that are paid appropriately and aren't so significantly less paid than the folks that are in the permanent positions versus the temporary. I mean, I don't know a whole lot of folks that the reservists, I'm assuming, have other things that they do for money. Otherwise, I mean, they're not just a reservist. But if you're working full time as a firefighter for that basically same amount of money, you don't really have the time for a second job. So just the practicality of it, while there may be a pool of people willing to take that, it kind of concerns me that I don't think that this district should be entering into that kind of situation that puts people kind of on the cutting edge of poverty and not being able to have a second job because they're working as a firefighter full-time already. I definitely don't want my firefighters to be working two jobs, for heaven's sakes.
The salary, whether we add in this little $7,509, I just don't see it right in front of me. What is the salary then each year per firefighter? If we say,
are we talking for alternative one? Or
yes. What do they make in a year?
$10 an hour. Yep.
Okay. Okay. Somewhere in here there was like $65,000 for that was probably two. Yeah, but one thing I saw was rather substantial, I thought. Okay.
Well, Madam President.
With the fully burdened amount, it's 67.
Mm-hmm. With all the benefits. Director Sanders?
I don't think anybody can argue with the fact that firefighters deserve to make a lot of money. Who among us is willing to run into a burning building or deal with very serious medical issues? The question is, at this particular juncture, how much can the district afford? And do we or do we not take advantage of this grant opportunity? We can always address the question of whether we're paying our firefighters a sufficient amount of money. I think the purpose today is to just consider whether or not we're going to accept this grant and move on and how we're going to apply the money. It seems to me that the most prudent thing to do, given the demographics that we have in this community, that we staff the engines that respond to emergencies as robustly as possible. This gives us an opportunity to do that, and we'll have a couple of years to evaluate how well it works, and then going forward, when the grant expires, whether or not we want to continue that, perhaps at an elevated salary for the entry-level firemen that will be hired to round out the crews that go out on emergency calls.
Yes, please. Let's hear it.
I'm sorry, William. You have your request for public comment, and you've been very patient and waiting, and so let's hear from you, William Canoop.
Bill Canoop, retired fire chief, 25 years in the fire service. So I just want to calm some of your concerns, especially Director Rice. First of all, as far as PERS is concerned, you're not vested in PERS until 5 years, period. Exclamation point, done deal. So 2 years does not make them anything different than a regular casual employee like a reserve, okay? That's one. Two, after spending 25 years in a fire service that was a very small community, just like this one, and starting out with engine crews that were two people and eventually working up to three, I can tell you that four is the minimum you need. When things happen, they happen quickly. When you need to react, you need to react quickly. As Chief Shalhoub alluded to, the most important thing is when you have a life threatened in a fire, law states two in, two out. If you don't have that, technically you can't go in. If it's seriously threatened, you can go ahead and make the decision, but OSHA can still come down on you. Anyway, I don't want to belabor that point. I just want you guys to understand, okay, these firemen are trying to get their foot in the door. It's nothing different than an apprentice, okay? And these guys understand the limitations of the job. They understand, and I'll tell you what they're going to be doing. They're going to be testing in other departments because they want a full-time career, and that's what they're looking for. This is a way for them to get experience, to write on their resume, hey, I've had 2 years' experience with Cambria Fire. The other thing is that's really important, and I just lost my place, sorry. Many hands make light work, not only in fires, but also in medical emergencies, as Chief Shalhoub talked about. You don't know if you're going to have to carry somebody down three flights of stairs. You don't know if you got CPR going. CPR, you need at least four people to do it adequately, and that's not counting the ambulance people. Days off. Director Rice was concerned about them working a second job. You can go and talk to the Cal Fire guys. You can talk to any fire guy you want, and I guarantee you about 75% of them got a second job because they work their days off. They're either in construction. You know, in other words, they work it on their days off. So don't be concerned that they're not getting enough sleep and so on and so forth. I'm trying to calm your fears as far as some of this stuff goes. And $3,500 a year for one extra person on an engine is golden. I mean, if I had the bucks, I'd give you the money. That's how important it is. Can I answer any questions that you might have that may have come up?
No, I think okay. Your comments are okay. Well.
Thank you for your time.
Taken,
I appreciate it.
And we appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam President, I move that we approve with regard to the SAFER grant staffing alternatives and options that alternative one be approved. Alternative one is presented in the staff report for item 9A and as explained by the chief today.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
If I can just interrupt briefly.
Mr. Carmel.
That's the alternative that requires the resolution be adopted. Yeah. So you have resolution 38215 right behind it.
So I will amend my motion to include adoption of resolution 38-215.
Okay.
2015, excuse me.
Okay.
No, still second that.
And still seconded, good. All right, any further discussion? Director Rice.
I just want to make it absolutely clear that any objection that I have to alternative one, which I don't intend to vote against this, has nothing to do with the $7,500 and has more to do with what we're actually providing to those firefighters as a salary. I think it makes it hard to keep morale up when some people that are working for half of what the other folks are working for. So that's where my objection lies. I'm glad to hear that there's a benefit to them and that we won't hopefully have a problem recruiting for that. But that's my concern. It's not the 70. I'd pay $75,000, frankly. I don't think we should refuse the grant. It's a good grant. We got a lot of money. We need to do it.
Thank you. I only have one last just observation and comment. We're talking about firefighters, of course, and it's just a sensitivity thing. We talk so much about the risk and the work of the guys doing the job, but there are gals doing that job. And so probably we're better off just to talk about the firefighters. But that's just an observation.
Thank you, President Robinette. You're absolutely 100%
you noticed
right.
Too. Okay. Well, 50% of us noticed here.
Imagine.
Okay, so I think we are ready.
I don't like the fact that we're giving poverty level salary, that's all. So.
Okay, we'll have a roll call on this, please.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion carries 4-0. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we're moving now then to item B, the PROS Commission. And General Manager Gruber, would you introduce that, please?
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 9B is discussion and consideration to reappoint PROS Commissioners Mr. Steve Niffen and Adolph Atencio for a four-year term. Staff recommends that that the Board of Directors reappoint Commissioners Steve Niffen and Adolph Atencio and the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission for a new four-year term. The Cambria's PROS Commission is created and composed of five members. The Commission advises the Board of Directors on Parks, Recreation, and Open Space-related matters. Pursuant to the CCSD Municipal Code, Section 7.08.010, members of the PROS Commission serve staggering four-year terms and are appointed by the Board of Directors. The term of PROS Commission Steve Niffen and Adolph Atencio will end on December 31st, 2019. The PROS Commission bylaws guidelines adopted by the CCSD Board of Directors provides that upon the request of a retiring commissioner at the end of the completed term of office, with the recommendation of the PROS Commission and at the discretion of the CCSD Board of Directors, a commissioner may be reappointed for an additional term up to 4 years. Commissioner Niffen and Commissioner Atencio have requested to be considered for reappointment. Their request was reviewed by the PROS Commission, which has recommended that their reappointment accordingly. It is recommended that the Board of Directors reappoint Commissioner Steve Niffen and Adolph Atencio to the PROS Commission for a four-year term. And on the following page is the date appointed and the terms of expiration relating to the current PROS commissioners. If I can answer any questions, just please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam President, I move that Commissioners Atencio and Niffen be reappointed to the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission for a four-year term.
I would second and also just comment that having observed Mr. Niffen and Mr. Atencio during this past number of years on the PROS Commission, I think they really are have done a terrific job of their work on the commission. Mr. Niffen is a strong advocate for youth sports, and as I indicated earlier, has already obtained a contribution of $5,000 to develop the first field on the community park. And Mr. Atencio is also very actively involved with trails in this community. And again, both he and Mr. Niffen have been very active members of the commission, and I would urge their reappointment.
Further comments, discussion? Director Rice?
Maybe I didn't hear you right the first time when you made the report about PROS. I thought you said there were two positions other than these. I'm kind of confused.
No, there's one more that
is vacant. Oh, it's the one that says
vacant.
That it's vacant.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That ends in 2018, so it's actually
correct.
A shorter
and
term.
And that's what they will be recommending filling at their next meeting.
Okay. I just have a couple of quick comments about PROS in general. I don't think since I've been on the board we've actually gotten the report. Quarter recommendations from them, have we? We've been told they made some decisions about doing the grading and doing some of the things that need to be done on the project for the active part of the ranch. But I don't remember them bringing us recommendations for us to make a decision versus them just making decisions about doing the Parks and Rec. So, and I just wanted to mention that because I would like to hear from them more frequently, especially because we've got a fairly big, we've now got this grant thanks to Mr. Niffen, which I know he has done a huge amount of work in this community to make sure that this community is provided recreation opportunities along with everybody here on the board. So kind of side, not exactly to the agenda, but it would be nice to have a little bit more information. I appreciate the reports we get from Director Thompson. It'd be nice to at least get some kind of annual report at least of what's going on over there, because sometimes it feels like they're not an advisory board, but they're their own entity. But maybe I just don't understand.
In thinking about future agenda items, that is an excellent one, of course.
Thank you. Madam President, may I comment on just one thing? Is that any decision that the PROS Commission makes is especially regarding contracts or anything like that, is a recommendation. And for an example, the contract for the plans for the grading and drainage of the park were brought to the board for consideration. And I think it's a good point, whatever, it's up to the board's discretion, but maybe a quarterly update from the president or something like that. But I think Director Thompson's done a good job in his reports. But remember, they have a budget, and any decision they make, for an example, if the board so chooses to reallocate the money for the graded and drainage that was put on hold, then of course that contract would have to come to the board for approval. So at that point in time, it's pretty transparent and everybody knows what's going on.
It's been a bit since they last did. I remember a couple years ago there was a PowerPoint that was provided to the board with respect to the different aspects of PROS, but most recently there was the update from the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, which is an active part of the PROS responsibility, and so I think that that's certainly having another overall update might not be a bad idea, but there, any decision they make comes through the this board.
Yes, yes, it does. And getting back to the business at hand of these two commissioners and being appointed for another four-year term, I wanted to comment on them. And it is true, of course, the hierarchy really is of the ranch. It, of course, is the CCSD and Board of Directors, and then we have PROS, and then we have the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve for the conservation easement. And what we have here collectively, I think, is a very strong network for protecting the integrity of the ranch, first and foremost. And with PROS, both Vice President Thompson and I served on that together as chair or vice chair, probably 5 years together on that. And it's an interesting one because many of the things they have worked on, talk about perseverance on the community park and going through all the process of public input, public workshops, actually changing the dog park location from, clear across the ranch to where you drive in by the rodeo grounds. It would have been located practically over by the highway. Finally getting those kinds of things considered and moved, I think, has been a really big improvement. Many of the people that we have a representative, by the way, from the dog park on PROS, too, but many people that go to the dog park are not necessarily the kind that want to have to walk that far with their dog, either. Mm-hmm. So it's a process that's, I have to give everyone credit on PROS, I think, on the perseverance side of it, that a little progress where they're finally getting close to maybe talking about a dog park, maybe getting finished up with some of the grading and those kinds of things, little steps over years. It's thrilling to me that Mr. Niffen and Mr. Atencio hang in there. I think they're both to be commended for their dedication. The other nice thing about Mr. Atencio and Mr. Niffen is for their service, but also it's that collective partnership again. It is that working together as both Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and with PROS. So I think it becomes far more insightful, collective kind of partnership too. So
if I may speak to that, I completely agree, which is one of the reasons why we might want to consider having some sort of similar committee commissions set up for, I don't know, fire services, so that we have a group of folks that's well informed about what's been happening. Just like PROS, they know what the projects are that are coming up. They know the ins and outs of all of the things the district is trying to do in parks, and they can persevere. We don't have anything similar in water and wastewater or under the utilities, so to speak, that can become familiar and help guide the board with their expertise and have committee meetings that then help maintain and persevere on things like maintenance and asset management, or on fire, determining levels of service and making recommendations to the board. It seems to me it would be an opportunity to consider those kinds of things, because I do think PROS, wow, it is an excellent resource, and the folks that have been serving on it, thank you. I'm super happy about that. It might not be a bad idea to consider doing similar things in the departments that we spend a lot more money in from our budget.
I think we want to recall, too, how did PROS come about? And don't forget, it was the county who contributed $500,000 when we did buy the ranch. And part of that agreement was to have a community park. And so that called in for the commission. And it's been going on all that time. So that's a good discussion. Are we ready for the question? Okay. Director Sanders, you want to just succinctly put it together again? It's to approve this, of course.
I move that Commissioners Niffen and Atencio be reappointed to the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission for a four-year term.
And that was seconded, and we are finished with our discussion, I think. We're good? Okay, may I have a roll call, please?
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. And motion...
And when will they be knighted?
Motion passes 4-0. Okay, we're moving on, rounding it up here to 9C. And General Manager Gruber, if you would introduce item 9C regarding the meeting schedule for 2016.
Thank you, Madam President. 9C, discussion and consideration to adopt the 2016 CCSD Board of Directors meeting schedule. It is proposed that the board adopt the attached regular meeting schedule for 2016 in order to confirm the regular meeting dates. This schedule, when adopted, will be used by staff, district council, and the media, local community groups, and interested individuals to prepare for the board meetings. The board has authority to amend these dates into this schedule as the year progresses or the need arises. In conformance with the current policy, all proposed 2016 meeting dates are on the fourth Thursday of each month, with the exceptions. And those exceptions are indicated below. February 18th falls on the third Thursday. July 28th, possible cancellation. November 17th is the third Thursday. And December 15th is the third Thursday. The only reason, I don't want to think that staff was taking any liberties here, but there are some districts and some cities that have a hiatus. What's the word I'm looking for, Tim? A dark month. So what we put in here is just as an alternative is a possibly no meeting this month, which would be July. But that really is based on, you know, what we have going on, and we always seem to have a lot going on. So we're just throwing it out there as a suggestion. We'll probably have twice as many meetings as these anyway. We want you to just to look at the meeting schedule and see if you're okay with it and adopt it as indicated here.
Thank you. We have no request for public comment on this item. So discussion. What's your pleasure? Director Rice?
One kind of important question and one suggestion. There doesn't appear to be any time listed on these. It doesn't say 12:30. It doesn't say anytime. I'm going to advocate again for evening meetings, at least later in the afternoon meetings, so that folks can attend who have to work. And I know that staff prefers to not have to be in town after 5 p.m., but I would like to at least advocate for a couple of meetings. We also briefly talked last year about having more than one meeting a month, and then we definitely could have a dark month. I think some cities that do that, where they have a dark month, maybe they don't meet only once a month. I'm going to just guess. They meet more than once a month, and so having a month off would seem to require having more meetings. I know we usually have more meetings, but if all of these are at 12:30, I know that's what it says in the bylaws. Can we please at least set a couple of these for evening time? I know we did last year with some of the, not last year, year before.
We did, yes, we did. And interestingly, the same people come.
And you don't necessarily get the same people, though. There's also a lot. There's also possibly different people that might be interested with it being an upcoming election year. I'm just saying it would be nice if we could have some, at least to start them later on than 12:30. It really interrupts my work day. I can't work at all, really, on a meeting day. Whereas if it started at 2, gives me a little bit of extra wiggle room. I know the rest of you don't have that. Well, maybe Mr. Sanders has more of a conflict, but I'm sure that he schedules around the dates anyway. But it would be nice to have evening, at least afternoon, and not just 12:30.
Madam President, I did want to note, if you're considering changing the meeting times, it will have to be an amendment to the bylaws.
Yes, it's in the bylaws the way it is.
So I would move approval of this schedule. It has no time on it, so move approval of this schedule, and we can look at that when we look at the bylaws in February.
Yeah, it has no time on it because the meeting times are at 12:30.
I'm just saying, I move approval of item 9C, to adopt the 2016 regular board meeting schedule.
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve this proposed schedule. Any further discussion? Director Rice?
The 25th doesn't conflict with Pine Dorado, does it?
Well,
in August?
Not based on the schedule that they held this year.
Based on the schedule they held
Pine
this
Dorado's
year.
Pine Dorado is Labor Day, right?
Yes, but they used to have the whole event on the weekend.
The Follies.
And yeah. So they had Follies were practicing.
And I'm not sure where that stands.
But the Follies were in January now. But anyway.
Yeah. So that would be my only concern, would be that date. But sorry.
Okay. Any further comments, discussion? Ready for the question? Roll call.
Director Rice?
No.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
No, I. We could stay here for a while then.
I thought I heard a no.
So we could be over yet.
Did I mishear the first vote?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I couldn't help it. No, yes. It's yes.
You don't have to step down from president, so you
can. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Moving, rounding the corner here, no request for public comment on 9D. General Manager Gruber, if you would please introduce 9D on
yes.
Ad hoc committee.
Yes, Madam President, board members. I'll introduce and I'll let District Counsel Tim Carmel just give a brief overlay of the staff report. Item 9D is discussion and consideration to appoint an ad hoc committee for the environmental impact report for the sustainable water facility. And Tim leaned over and asked me earlier, are you going to let me do one staff report at least? I said, I'll let you do 9D. How does that sound?
Oh, that's
so
great.
So I kept my
good.
I kept my promise to Tim.
Well, look at you, Tim.
I'm honored. Madam President, this item is to consider creation of an ad hoc committee to shepherd the EIR for the sustainable water facility through the process, through its completion, and then through the process itself, work with the staff and the consultant. It's varied. I don't know how often you'll be meeting, but it's a pretty intense process. It's a very long document, as you know. So that's the purpose of the item, and be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Before we have questions and discussion, I feel a public comment coming toward us. No, oh, never mind. Okay. All right. It's on item 10. So we will have that ready to go. 10. That's usually when we have filled up the full 30 minutes, but we'll go with it. That's fine. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you. Okay. So on this ad hoc committee, then I am going, I will recommend first that I serve on the ad hoc for the environmental impact report, and that Director Sanders serve on this based on his extensive background. I have been working informally, just as you have called for accountability on this EIR and what's going on. That has been my purpose in monitoring this in the first place and actually calling for the, by now, weekly work on this. So that would be my recommendation.
Madam Chair, I would move approval of your recommendation for the appointments to the Ad Hoc Committee on Environmental Impact Report.
Second the motion.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? Director Rice?
I am very happy to hear that Director Sanders would like to be on this committee. I also think we should spread the work around to other folks. You're doing a heck of a lot already. You do have the continuity, though, but you can be as involved as you want it because you're president. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. Ready for the question. Roll call.
Director Thompson?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion carries 3-1. Okay. We are moving on then to item 10, and we actually, that is continuation of public comment if it goes over 30 minutes, but also we have Christina here, and we do want you to feel welcome, and you are newer to the community, so certainly I would like to have your public comment now.
That flexibility, just catching on to that.
That's okay. Let's see, we have to get your button pushed, and there we go.
Oh, great. It's very brief. Before talking about the time and changing the time of the meeting, and I just wanted to speak coming from a community of a lot of friends, well, handful of us or so around my age that are interested in this meeting, but it is in the middle of the workday. And so I just, hope the bylaws and there could be a strong consideration of having this meeting more so in the evening. So it's easier for friends of mine that do have work during the day that are younger could actually be here and participate. I have the advantage of being here because I run a national organization, and but not most people my age. So I just wanted to address that briefly. Thank you so much.
May I comment on her comment?
Yes.
If we do have evening meetings, it would be very helpful if you would encourage people to attend.
I will do that.
Because the history has been that there's a kind of a fall off in attendance at night meetings. So we're trying to be accommodative, and so people need to take advantage of it. And if you could spread the word, that would be very helpful.
I already have. Okay. I had like 4 or 5 people. I wish we could be there. We have to be at work. So okay. I'm very much for that and appreciate good. Your feedback.
I would like to ask you some questions, too, and sure. I thank you for your comment. What time do you see that people that have been talking to you would show up?
I find I don't know what time you had this in the evenings before, so I'm a little bit in the dark there of what has.
So just your preference. What's your preference?
I found that when we do now Sunday potlucks, right, I find that the 5:30 to 9, we get a good crowd of 20 people or so. So, but that's on a Sunday. that's the experience I've had here as far as getting involved timeliness-wise. It seems like that 5:36 window seems to be good. But I'm not sure how realistic that is with your previous schedules and, or, you know, but that's my experience. So
thank you. Well, we will consider that. We have before, and it's never bad to see if there's more interest, because that's the whole point of the meetings, is we like the people to come. Mm-hmm. And so certainly we're always open to, are there other ways to get more people here? Yes, we certainly are interested.
Well, thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Madam President, I'm usually in bed by 8, so I don't know if that's an issue. But
I didn't want to mention
was
this.
Was that on your job application?
TMI.
Yeah, it's a tough
lot,
Jerry.
Okay, thank you. Suggestions for future agenda items. One that we already had mentioned was I had actually on one of my notes of to-dos for next, we will be inviting probably Mr. Niffen and maybe a couple of others from the PROS board to just come and share and give an update with us. And we have to hurry because I only have 3 seconds left, and if I keep on talking, it'll just buzz anyhow.
Oh.
Time's up. Meeting's over. Okay. So that one I would say yes. Are there other items that people want to suggest that, or not?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's see. Director Sanders first.
I have nothing at present to suggest.
You should turn your light off. Welcome back. Director Rice?
As I reported on with the Rates Committee, we probably should come back at some point, maybe at the February meeting, because the rates won't be implemented until the next billing cycle. But the Rates Committee needs to be coming up with a suggestion of what to do about surcharges and the allotment amount for the water, because I think it's kind of critical since we base the rates on a 70% usage, and that's impossible to reach with people at the current restricted allotments. So we need to have that discussion as a board, and I think the Rates Committee for sure by February can have a suggestion, if not by January. I'd like to try and bring that back as soon as possible.
Okay. All right.
Is that, do I need to make a motion, or will the president take that under advisement? How would you like me to do that?
On this, we take it under advisement. I want to talk with you further about it, I think, just to understand. Not today, but...
I'm sure the general manager can also give you a good idea about what it is that the Rates Committee is going to be doing on that. So that way you can have the discussion when you get to the agenda preparation point.
In fact, my only hesitation was this, and I perhaps I'm not understanding this request. With the fact that the rate increase process now is extended and until 45 days from the 29th, would this involve anything that would impact that's already out there?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's the clarification.
It would only impact the way that it only impacts the amount of water that'll get used once the new rates are in place.
Yeah. Okay. And,
provided we don't have a successful process.
Speaking in support of Director Rice, there are a number of potential appeals of surcharges that could be coming to the board that the board might be able to deal with if the board articulates a policy that would cover many of them. So it's an opportunity actually to save a lot of time, a lot of board time, mm-hmm. by doing what she's suggesting.
Why don't we put it into a motion? And
Madam President, I think what Director Rice, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think she meant the Conservation Committee and not the ad hoc committee. So they're just clarification.
Yes, Conservation.
Yeah, I was looking at Director Sanders. You should know I was looking at Director Sanders when I was talking about it, and not the absent Director Behringer.
I knew what you meant.
Okay.
Thank you, Director Sanders. I'm sorry to confuse you, Director Robin.
So you can see why I was asking.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for
before
the.
Before then, we've got these
segues. They're overrated.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so, so we're talking the conservation.
Indeed, we are talking about the conservation
number
committee.
Number one, we will certainly keep that ad hoc active, And so the two of you, I think, at this point, would be meeting with General Manager Gruber, and when you're ready to bring forth something to address this, which is very important, then you can, we will.
Thank you. Yes. And do we need to reappoint committees? I think it's in our bylaws, but I think
we'll do that in January.
We'll do that in January. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I remember doing last year. I just want to make sure that we don't lose track of it.
I will. Well, that's nice thing. I mean, now it's far more. We will do it in January. Yeah. Okay. So, seeing no further comments that anyone wants to make for today, then I want to thank everyone that stayed and is here. I appreciate that. And thank you to the board. And everyone, have a great holiday. Thank you so much. Meeting adjourned.